Blog Talk Radio.
When the news is all bad, when you're sour and blue, when you start to get mad, you should do what I do. Tell yourself how lucky you are. When the fates are unkind, when your life's going wrong, when you're limping along and get kicked from behind, tell yourself how lucky you are. Why do you cry? A cloudy sky, an empty purse, a crazy universe. My philosophy is simply things could be worse. So be happy you're here. Think of life as a thrill. And if worse comes to worse, as we all know it will, thank your lucky star you got this far. And tell yourself how lucky you are. How lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky you are.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
This is Friday, August the 16th, 2013. My name is Michael Lawson with Thomas Fortenberry. Good afternoon, Thomas.
Hello, sir. Cairo's burning.
Cairo's burning. Shark week. I couldn't sleep last night. And then we have this.
A network that spends millions of dollars to spotlight Hillary Clinton is a network with an obvious bias, and that's a network that won't be hosting a single Republican primary debate.
Wow.
That's right.
So is that a rinse cycle?
That's rinse. Beavis, as the pronunciation that Rachel Maddow says.
So here is a guy who's a chairman of the RNC.
Right.
Who is, in case people aren't aware, this is an ongoing thing they've been trying for a while to get their Fox News, faux news, whatever, to be the host of everything. You know, they've already gotten to where they hosted a few of the debates last year.
No.
Last
election. No. They have never hosted a debate.
Oh, I thought they
this,
had.
No, we're going to do it today. They, or the Democratic Party, have never hosted a debate. They might have had an organization that they were familiar with host a debate, but they, the parties, have
but
never hosted a debate.
And the Republicans hosted, they did that last time, didn't they? Didn't they have their...
they had it at the...
live from the presidential...
Right, but that's... But that's supposed to be... That was nonpartisan. The name RNC has never hosted a debate, just like the name Dems,
okay,
has never hosted a debate.
So here we are. Though, we played first,
right,
just to set that up. A quote.
That was 40 years ago.
34 years ago, one of the founding
30 or 40,
you know, minds of conservatism and
Paul
laying out
Weinberg
their agenda. And he said specifically, we do not want
everyone
to vote. We want to limit voting as much as humanly possible, so it's just our people, and we win.
So we win.
And this is the result of this. Now,
right,
we have sweeping anti-voting laws across the nation, anywhere there's a Republican governor sitting. And now we get the RNC saying, last week they came out with a thing that they wanted, Hannity and,
right,
and O'Reilly to be the official moderators.
But
that
Rush Limbaugh.
We
could get people like that. But let me read what it says. The Republican committee has approved a resolution to block two television networks from hosting GOP presidential primary debates. Now, Rince Priebus, that's Rince Priebus, threats against CNN and NBC unless the networks drop plans to air programs about possible Democratic presidential contender Hillary Clinton, Hillary Rodham Clinton. The vote at this committee's summer meeting in Boston was unanimous.
So that means everyone loved it.
10 people.
Let's
10 people.
Block any kind of. And you know, here's the part that bothers me, though. They want to block networks, as they say. What does it say? The networks had, quote, an obvious bias.
Well,
this
from
a company, though, these are the people who created Faux News, which is not even a news outlet. They've even been sued in court about that to even have the name removed, and they said they were a entertainment channel using the guise of a news network to poke fun at the political process. So they even say themselves that they're not a legitimate channel. They've affirmed that in court, and their only goal and their only agenda is to promote the conservative ideology and their candidates. And yet he says that other networks have an obvious bias because they have that little thing. What's it called? Facts.
Well, so we can't let facts get in the way of the actual truth. Now,
right.
The League of Women Voters are the people that normally host these debates.
Mm-hmm.
And since it costs so much money to add a debate on a CBS primary, an NBC primary, an ABC primary, that they will host it on CNN. They've hosted it on Fox, and they hosted it on MSNBC.
Right.
That's where they're done. And, of course, the PBS.
Right.
Now, the problem is that they never hosted a debate. And they want their own people. They said, we don't want you asking questions that we don't want.
Right. And see, this is the big key, because last year they got furious that our last election, that they thought that their dream candidate was unfairly caught with a couple bad quotes. And they don't want that to happen this time, which is why they also said they wanted to halve the number of debates. They don't want as much.
Oh, well, this is the whole thing.
To be,
this is the whole thing. They want them to be masked so you don't hear what they actually are saying, because these people don't have anything to say. They have five talking points, each one of them. And when they get those past those five talking points, it's like this. Dead air.
Yeah.
They have nothing to say.
And it's also
like our first two,
even
four,
on their talking
4 minutes
points,
on the getting on the air, we were dead air too. But anyway.
Even like our governor here and all, even when you get past their talking
but
point.
You know, that's
they,
a short,
yeah.
We would say military.
As soon as you ask a question about any of their talking points, you find out they're actually lying.
Well, as we said in the military when I was in the Air Force, we used to tell, when we worked on the F-4 Famjet and the 111 pods, the things back, and they said, oh, man, there was a problem. The missiles couldn't fire here. And we'd go up and check it, check the radar, just to check the missiles. Worked fine. Find out the switch was in the off position, because you see, we had a printout of everything.
Yeah.
So we'd sign it off short between the headsets. So we're writing this on right now, and so these guys,
like,
so the wing commander that time is before, who was one of the aces, General Oles. He came and said, "Look," Colonel. Then he came and said, "Look, don't put that in there, please." I mean,
it's embarrassing.
He said it was embarrassing because, see, some of these guys were cross-trained over for 102s, and they were not going to make it.
Yeah.
I mean, they couldn't even turn the switch on in the right position. Please, they turned it on TV mode,
sure,
because we didn't have TV in the aircraft yet. That was a spare slot because we were going to put it in, but when they were flying it, it wasn't there. They put it in TV mode, and it would crash the computer.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, short between the headset. That's what we have when we have Pat McCrory. Because, you see, he's trying to claim he was so great. When he was the mayor of Shaw, he brought all this stuff here. That's bull.
Yes, yes.
He didn't do jack when he was here. The only people that did something was the city council. and the county commission, who were all Democrats. But now, again, he's not doing nothing up there because Art Pope runs the government of North Carolina.
Proof of it is when he's running as Mr. Moderate, Mr. I'm the good guy. And one of his great...
Mr. Dummy.
I will never, ever, ever sign anything against women's and...
He didn't read it, remember?
And he turned around and signed it. No, because he was told to. You will sign
it. Absolutely, you will sign it. And he asked the question, what? He said, I haven't read that. I haven't even seen that in the bill yet. He said, but I haven't read it. He still hasn't read it. What's he got to read? Our poll tells him, stand right there. Don't move.
Everything you need to know about a governor is when he says, I am signing things into law that I've never read and I don't know what they contain.
Here's the worst part about it. It's going to be rejected. None of this stuff is going to pass. This man is a complete fool, and he's going to go down as a fool.
Yes.
The people here were so outraged and so they didn't care about the Democratic leader we had. They didn't care about her. They didn't care about her lieutenant governor. And they said, it's blah. Well, we know him a little bit. They didn't know jack about this man.
Yeah.
So they voted for him.
That's one of the things that I held against. A lot of people.
Stupid people. Pull my plug here. Okay. The stupid people. Pull my plug. How am I doing that? Anyway, stupid people.
Short between
the headset. That's what it was. It was a short between the headset. We had that in the very beginning.
And Mike, before we get into any more of this political news and world news, I want to talk about something.
Well, I got to be making
desperately
fast.
Important.
This speech. Go ahead.
Desperately important.
Go ahead.
Found this out on the way over here to the radio station.
Okay.
The rock and roll group Kiss has bought and been approved by the NFL. A football team.
Not the NFL.
And they're bringing the Kiss football team, the LA Kiss, to Los Angeles. They're going to be a big arena team.
Arena.
Yeah, because, it's only safe if you hit the walls. I guess.
Yeah.
But so literally, the Kabuki Theater Kiss Tongue and Fire and Spitting Blood group. Yeah, that's going to be football in America now. Just letting you know.
Wonderful. All right. Are they all going to be wearing those same painted faces?
I'm hoping that's
going to be. Oh, man, that'd be rude.
As my friend said just 5 minutes ago, he said, they're going to have flopping tongues out the front of their mouthpiece.
Well, now we got to get serious now. Serious friends.
Like
I hate that when someone says. I hate that when someone says that. But anyway, serious friends.
I get all nervous.
Right. We need to. I interviewed Mayor Pro Tem Patrick Cannon about, I think it was a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. It was a fabulous interview, and I said we were going to have part two, and we are now going to listen to part two. And
can I say something else about this real quick? I just want to reiterate to people, we had a fantastic mayor here. Again, this is a blue city in
blue city.
Red state. I just want to stress that. But we were doing so well that when this guy was tapped to be Secretary of Transportation, did he not make history? Did he not sail through with zero snags in, I think, record-breaking time and 100?
I didn't even know he was confirmed. And all of a sudden, he's there talking.
They were talking about he was going to Washington to begin the confirmation.
Bingo, he was there.
And he was on 100-0.
Right. Well,
so we set history. We're so good. We're such a good city. So now, here is the lieutenant under him that we're hoping to step
airport
down. Let's
and the thing is about it, they keep worrying about the airport. Well, now, our former mayor, who is now the head of transportation, also is the boss of the FAA. Who controls yes or no whether or not this city will come under the dummy in Raleigh, McCrory, and the other slick
Pat
McCrory. I mean,
Pat and Pope.
Okay, let's play this right now. This is a great interview. And if you have any questions, give us a call on 716-5242. That's 646. 716-5242, 646-716-5242, and this is part two of the interview with Patrick Cannon.
This is The Last Word, August 16th, 2013,
And we're here again with Mayor Pro Tem Patrick Cannon, who is a candidate for the mayor, to be mayor of Charlotte, North Carolina. Glad to see you again.
Always good to see you, Brother Michael. We're glad to be here, of course, once again on The Last Word, which you're going to have.
The last word is right. In our last portion, we discussed a lot of things, the minority women's business enterprise entrepreneur program,
mm-hmm.
and we talked about some things with the how you brought yourself to be where you are now, because you brought yourself here. I mean, this wasn't given to you.
Well, you know what? I wish I could take all the credit for that, mm-hmm. but there are some shoulders that I stand on that has helped to get me to where I am today. People like Ron Leeper, who was the first person to help, one of the people to help create district representation
mm-hmm.
in Charlotte, which allowed it, of course, to happen on other levels, so that women and minorities would have an opportunity to have a voice. But it's shoulders like his and people like Ella Scarborough, who has been helpful in the past. In fact, was the person that actually tapped me to run for City Council District 3 when she was looking to run for City Council at large.
Mm-hmm.
Little did I know that at the time, because when she tapped me, I said thanks, but no thanks. I was fine where I happened to be because I just had no real interest in politics. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's not really up to us. God has a will for each and every one of our lives. And obviously it was felt, I would imagine, that this was my season to be engaged in politics. And so here I am, being elected as a district representative, then, of course, citywide, and then also mayor pro tem, which people say, okay, well, if you're mayor pro tem, obviously you act in the capacity of mayor already. So it just makes some common sense for you to probably run for that office to be the next mayor of Charlotte. But, of course, we shall see.
Well, so then you're one of the examples of when Barack Obama says, you didn't build this.
That's exactly right. That would be right.
So, that's something that when the president said, you didn't build this, there are a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
and you just said it to you stood on their shoulders to get where you are.
Yeah.
And but now, since you're where you are, you need to perform.
I do indeed.
And this is what we're going to talk about here. There was something about what is the East Side Strategy Plan?
The East Side Strategy Plan is something that was created after I initiated the West Side Strategy Plan.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, the West Side, particularly Midwest and Southwest Charlotte, was the place that people just didn't want to be.
Yeah.
In fact, no part of the West Side, even Midwest and Northwest Charlotte, which still needs, in my opinion, a lot of work. And as a result of me instituting a West Side Strategy Plan, which basically concentrated on public safety, housing, economic development, where we would go and create jobs and I would bring businesses to the area. I had it steered where we would concentrate on transportation. So I set up a shuttle that would actually go along the West Boulevard corridor and take people to approximately 25,000 to 30,000 jobs off of Westinghouse Boulevard,
mm-hmm.
also known as our foreign exchange zone.
Mm-hmm.
Because people will recall, if they know anything about Charlotte, we used to have Fruhoff, Trucking Company, Converse, General Tire. All those jobs, those blue-collar jobs, were the
right.
kind of jobs that really kept us balanced here
right.
in the city. And to be quite honest with you, we need that back. But to continue to answer your question, I went ahead and, as a result of instituting the West Side Strategy Plan, somebody said, Cannon made that work pretty well for his side of town. Think there's anything that can be done for our side of town? And so as a result of me bringing about the West Side Strategy Plan, the East Side Strategy Plan came into fruition. Nancy Carter would have then been the district representative for the East Side. But that one didn't – your rep, right? But that one didn't concentrate – on as many things as mine did,
right?
Because you heard me mention housing and economic development and transportation and job creation, things of that nature, land use patterns. That one more so concentrated on infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, it should have been identical to mine, because you see where we are today. And
yeah.
I said then, in the early night, I said, you know, what you see happening to the West Side, East Side is going to be next if we aren't careful and if we don't institute some things like what we're doing over here on the West Side. And sure enough, you can see where they're still challenged over there a little bit.
Well, you know, because I live over the East Side in the Hickory Grove area,
mm-hmm.
and when I had my house built in 86, there was nothing past me. There was nothing but woods.
Right.
And I loved that. And as a matter of fact, the Hickory Grove Baptist Church was being built the same time. I think we talked about you helping out at Hickory Grove Elementary School.
Right, exactly.
Well, Hickory Grove Elementary School, I think, was being built the same time, too, because my daughter was going to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, she went to Northwest School of the Arts on the west side.
Mm-hmm.
So, talking about the west side, West Meck played a major part of getting people to know about the west side because the kids came there.
Right, exactly. And I think as a result, people saw what the real need happened to be in the western portion of the city. That helped me to be able to make my case, to be able to try to pull in entities like Rooms to Go, great distribution center to create jobs, Gray Bar Electric,
yes,
which is right there at Remount and Wilkinson Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I long for the day where we can have jobs that will be all over the city, east, west, north, and south, for people to be able to take advantage of right in their own backyards if they so desire.
Right. Now, you also helped bring the CIAA here.
I did. Back in 2006, I was tapped to go up to Norfolk, Virginia. I went there with then Ed Tapscott, who used to be with he helped actually start up the Bobcats here in the city of Charlotte, and another person from CRVA, and that is the Charlotte Regional Visitors Authority. And we went to Norfolk, and I lobbied the presidents of all of the colleges and universities that Charlotte would be the place to be outside of Raleigh to come, because we had a village concept that I thought that they could embrace, that the fans would really appreciate through their experience of our cultural facilities, of our cuisine, of our sports venues, and you know, our area hotels and restaurants. Everything is like right there in walking distance. So you literally didn't have to get out of the car versus what they were having to go through beforehand. You know, they have to stay long distances away. The weather would be pretty bad, and it was just pretty tough for them there. So I wouldn't say it was an easy sale, but it was a sale that I believe that the presidents appreciated and said, you know what, we're going to make Charlotte the place we're going to go. And as a result, $25 million, $30 million, $40 million has been the return year after year here in the city of Charlotte that we can say, you know what, this has been a really good thing for the city of Charlotte, and we want to continue to bring the CIAA here. I will tell you that it will probably go up for a request for proposal now. That will go out for consideration, and I think areas like Atlanta will probably want to participate, even Washington, D.C., per se, maybe some areas in Virginia. But I will tell you that I believe Charlotte, by way of the fan experience, I think the fans really appreciate Charlotte because – it's not too far, because nobody wants to go all the way down to Atlanta, per se.
Right.
That's a long way.
Right.
But Charlotte, they've gotten accustomed to, but I think we need to kind of work on our side of the water here as well,
right,
to increase more scholarship opportunities for those youth that desire to go on for higher learning.
And now we have all this these restaurants that were built up for the convention. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a whole lot more places for them to go now.
No, absolutely. A whole lot more to places to go and dine and to entertain and to really take advantage of. We got a new park here, Romare Bearden Park,
right,
which is now opening up. And so by the time they get here and they're ready to go again for it all in the next year, because they have one more year here on their contract with us, they'll be able to see a lot of things that are happening right here. And, you know, it's just going to be a good opportunity for the CIAA participants, I think, and the presidents to be able to engage here.
What about the monies for transportation infrastructure that I believe we got at one time or were supposed to get? How has that worked? Have we gotten money to put in this light rail yet? Where we want it.
Not all of it. You still want to have some monies that will be coming in from the state. They need to continue to help us with regard to that. We still want to.
I understand they're against that, though.
Well, they're against a lot of stuff these days, I'm told. But I think for the most part, you do have some people up there who might be a little bit more pro-transit than they are some of these other things right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the federal level, we want to continue to work toward receiving monies from them as well. And then also concentrate on any Tiger Grant funding that's out there. That kind of funding comes every so often, but when it comes, you can go after that and try to make sure that you're doing well as it relates to that. We just broke ground, as you well know, to kind of continue to move the blue line forward, headed up north. That's going to be getting closer to you and your area too.
Yeah.
University will be able to enjoy some of that.
Oh, but, man, do you know how many people would be able to come downtown if they had some sort of transportation from the university?
Well,
I mean, it's unbelievable.
It's going to be huge because now you're talking about access to jobs, you're talking about access to health care, access to the things we talked about a moment ago in terms of just being inside of the village itself of the center city, taking advantage of all the things that was just made mention of. So it's going to prove, I think, to be helpful and also help people get out of some of that congestion that's up and down the highways and some of our streets right now that you're having to endure, which is not a good thing.
We talked a little about we touched on a little bit about the Citizens Review Board, and I know
we did.
I know you know Matt Newton, right?
I do know Matt.
Yeah.
I just saw him recently.
And what's your opinion, or how would the mayor be involved in this Citizens Review Board?
Right now, we have a council manager board, and the mayor actually serves as the person who is the chair of that board. And so in this case right now, that would mean Mayor Patsy Kinsey is that person. Mayor Fox, or I should say Secretary Fox, then Mayor Fox, had asked that it go through committee to be looked at and considered. As a result, there was some thought to be able to go and to allow for the committee to, as I said, assess it, but then engage the community. And you allow the stakeholders between both law enforcement as well as even citizens, especially citizens, to engage in that process to start getting some critique and some background on what's happening where with the board, what kind of enhancements, if any, should be made. And so that is to go back to committee. The committee is to look at what those findings may have been about and then determine how they move forward with establishing more teeth or making it stronger than what it currently is.
Right.
Because I believe that there's some concern that the board is not as strong as it could be or as it should be relative to some of the powers and authorities that people may want, as we discussed in the last show.
Well, who's on this committee?
On the mayor's committee?
Yeah.
I don't know who all the members are on that committee. I want to say maybe...
Are there any city council members?
Cooksey. Oh, they're all, they're all council people.
They're all council people?
They're all council people.
Oh, they are or they're all?
They are all. They are all council people.
And how many?
Five people on that board.
Okay.
Five people. So they'll come back with some recommendation as to how they move forward. Appointments is going to be key. I think drafting any different language than what's out there is going to be key. You have to determine also, depending upon the language you're talking about drafting, if any of that will require the state to have to also weigh in to give the city the authority that it may want to have related to this board.
And why were there no, like, one community person on that board?
Because what happens is that when there's a referral made by the mayor or the city council, those typically go to the city council committees that are made up by the mayor.
Okay.
So the way we engage citizens would be through saying, okay, it's now been referred to X committee, whether it's public safety, economic development, transportation, environment, whatever it might be, housing. And then we say, okay, it's here. Now, what do we think needs to happen relative to making sure that there's proper engagement for all to participate?
Okay.
And that's how the citizens then engage. And so let's say I'm chairing my committee of some sort, which in my case is public safety.
So you're chairing this committee.
Right. So they would come to the committee,
right.
And then the committee, the chair of the committee would say, okay, I see the report, we've read the report, but I could still open the floor up for the citizens to be able to comment.
Right.
If we felt it would help us in terms of making our decisions.
Okay.
And typically, in a case like this or on an issue like this, you want to do that I did it with the noise ordinance. I did it with predatory towing, things of that nature, because I thought it was important to hear, one, from the industry,
right,
but then also from the people who had been affected out there on
right.
the street relative
mm-hmm.
To having their vehicles towed
right.
by what they would say would be just some bad means.
Right.
So, but that's how typically it happens process-wise in terms of engaging the citizens.
Well, I want to just round this out on the Citizen Review Board. The process
mm-hmm.
in place when a citizen wants to make a complaint against a police officer, say, I believe what they're saying now is that the citizens are not engaged and don't have the voice in this process. And I think they're saying that they want a larger voice in the process. Now, I know this is still active and still being put together, but how, and I guess the mayor is ex officio in anything that comes up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the mayor pro tem is ex officio, but I know the mayor should be ex officio, I would assume. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, the way it's set up, the mayor is ex officio in many of these cases because, you know, we have a council-manager form of government.
Right.
Not a strong mayor, so yes,
right.
You're right on point.
Right.
But the mayor pro tem would have a voice. The mayor pro tem has the ability to both legislate and act in the capacity as mayor.
Okay.
Yes.
So then what do you think about having this Citizen Review Board as a more citizen review board?
I think it's good because the reason it was established, remember, it's called
right.
what you just said, a Citizens Review Board.
Right.
So the citizens need to be engaged in it.
Mm-hmm.
What concerns me a little bit, though, Michael, is whether or not, depending upon how you structure this board and for the powers that you're asking for it to have,
mm-hmm.
if it would in turn cause for, board makeup-wise, for there to be less citizen involvement. And
mm-hmm.
here's what I mean by that. When you start talking about subpoenaing
right.
people, when you start talking about initiating your own investigations, and among some other things that are going to be out there in the way of, you know, changing the structure of how it currently
mm-hmm.
what it currently has in the way of teeth or no teeth, that also means that I can see a council potentially saying, okay, we need to make sure we have somebody with a background in, I don't know, criminology.
Right, on the board.
Law enforcement.
Right, right.
We may want somebody with a legal background,
mm-hmm.
so a lawyer of some sort. And it just has to be fitting such that, mind you, citizens, in my opinion, can still be a part of it because guess what? We have juries that meet every day.
I was just
right?
about to
I know
about
it. I read
jury.
Your mind well, brother. We have juries every day. I get
right.
it.
Yeah.
And they sit there and they make decisions on everything, you know, from... You know,
Zimmerman
to all kind of other cases.
Absolutely.
So
and
they're homemakers.
That's right.
They're engineers.
That's right.
They're construction folks.
Right.
They're registered voters.
Right.
Is what they are.
Right.
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 Okay.
Right.
So the question is, okay, could they still then in turn be on this board the same way?
Right.
Sure, they could.
Mm-hmm.
I think what the driver would be is you want to make sure that there's going to be. A level of fairness across the board
right.
for anybody who comes and makes an appeal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now somebody's going to be in the majority, somebody's going to be in the minority. I think you need to kind of have a balance of whatever that is, because if there's 11
right.
members on the board, right?
Right.
Then is it going to be 6-5
right.
Citizens,
mm-hmm.
And other maybe you know law enforcement, or is it going to be flipped?
Right.
You know what I mean? And let me say this about that though, even though you can structure it that way. Politics has always made strange bedfellows, right? So you don't know.
The day you're born to the day you die.
Right. So you really don't know who, in the end, on either side, will develop a nucleus.
Right, right, right.
Such
right.
that the citizens will say, you know what? That didn't go the citizens' way.
Yeah.
And
well,
yet we still got all these citizens on the board, but it didn't
yeah.
go the citizens' way. Well, it's not supposed to go the citizens' way or the police officer's
that's
way.
Right.
It's supposed to go in the way of what's fair,
that's
what's right,
that's right,
based upon the evidence that's
well,
come
well,
before
well,
you.
What is deemed right? I mean, you know, when you have this Zimmerman trial is,
right.
is a perfect example of mm-hmm. this. Some people say, I didn't, this one woman said, I didn't understand the way it was handed to me. I couldn't make a decision. All right, fine, that's fair enough. But the way they have it right now, the Citizen Review Board, the final say is with the city manager,
mm-hmm.
and he works for the city council. So the thing is that it's perceived that it would not go the way of the citizen because of that arrangement.
Well, but let's play that on out, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you just said it. The city manager, if it rests with the city manager,
mm-hmm.
and the city manager works for who?
City council.
We hire the city manager, right?
Okay.
Who is it that you're supposed to hold accountable in the end then?
City council.
All right.
That's right.
So if something's not happening the way it needs to be happening with the board, and you think that the city manager has made an inappropriate decision,
right.
you need to register that with the mayor and the city council to let your voice be heard.
Because the city manager is not elected.
And I will tell you
okay.
that there hasn't been a case that I know of
mm-hmm.
where the city manager has been engaged and someone has said, you know what, I didn't like the way the manager came down on
right.
that. Can you do something else about it? Now, you talked about the review process itself.
Mm-hmm.
Keep something in mind. Before an item that is filed
right.
even gets to the Citizens Review Board, it has to go through several other processes.
Oh, yes.
And sometimes there can be a number of complaints filed, but did it get to the level of the Citizens Review Board?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what people really don't know. But I will say to the listeners, if there has been an instance where you think something has happened and you need to file a complaint, call 704-336-2336. Again, 704-336-2336, anytime Monday through Friday between 8 a.m. to 5 p.m.,
mm-hmm.
or 704-336-2141
mm-hmm.
after hours. Okay? 336-2141 after
mm-hmm.
hours. And so you can do that. Now, typically, that's if you want to file it with the CMPD and start the process there.
Right.
I would suggest that you do it through the Community Relations Department because that's typically where it's going to end
oh,
up
yeah,
falling
anyway.
And, you know, we had a guy, Butch Simmons, who used to be over that, but you want to call 336-2382, 704-336-2382. 82, and their offices are located at 600 East Trade Street here in Charlotte, 600 East Trade Street here in Charlotte. And that will begin the process. And once that complaint is filed, it's assigned to an investigator in Internal Affairs,
right.
okay, or the appropriate supervisor in the officer's chain of command. And that's how it typically starts there, and then it goes through any disciplinary hearing, which is to be held, and then a decision is made by the CMPD. About the allegations of misconduct
mm-hmm.
In several ways.
Right.
Sustained, meaning the allegation is proven by evidence, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unfounded, the allegation is false. Okay. Not sustained, there is not information to prove or disapprove the allegation. And then the fourth is to exonerate,
mm-hmm.
which is just, the incident occurred.
Mm-hmm.
However, the
right.
officer involved acted lawfully or
right.
properly,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, if somebody doesn't like that, about the outcome of it, that's then when the appeal is heard.
Right.
And the appeal at that point engages the Citizens Review Board. And they'll hear the appeal of the cases involving the use of force or unbecoming conduct or arrest, search and seizure and discharge of firearms and so forth and so on. And that's how you get to that process. And it's lengthy. Didn't mean to give you all that.
Oh, yeah, well,
but I think
it needs to be. But it needs to be late. But the thing that a lot of people complain, well, out of 1,500, we get three processes where the officer or whatever was disciplined, and that just seems to be, well, nothing's 100%.
Right.
You know, so I think that is their complaint.
Yeah.
That is their complaint.
Yeah,
but you explained the process, which has never been explained before, to a vast audience. And so people get these ideas that, oh, it's just swept under the rug. Goes to the captain or the police chief or the commander, and it's in the circle file.
That's why I say go through the Community Relations Department rather than going through the department.
Right.
That, because that CRC acts as sort of the ombudsman or
right.
that intermediary person And if you need somebody on the council, myself
right.
or somebody else, you can call me,
and
I can take you through that process.
Isn't it the community relations, their job is also, I mean, to check on this, but they should keep the citizen involved in what's going on, where the process is.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that is, you know, best explanation I've heard about why the Citizen Review Board is where it's at. And ladies and gentlemen, you need to check. And we're looking, Review Board gains momentum. Is this what date is this?
This is an article back from 1997.
Mm-hmm.
What we're looking at, folks, is basically something that the Charlotte Post did, John Minter, and you heard Brother Michael talk reading the headline ahead, Review Board gains momentum.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was that when the Citizens Review Board first came up,
yeah,
it got shut down. I lost that vote 9-2.
Yes.
I brought it up,
yeah, mm-hmm.
and because I thought that there were some real issues that needed to be looked into. Now, mind you, again, the vast majority of our officers are doing great, but when you got renegades out there, you got to kind of put a halt to some of that stuff,
have,
right?
Yeah.
Bring some calm.
Absolutely.
And so, it failed initially, 9-2.
Mm-hmm.
Only two votes.
That's what Democrats were in control.
That's what Democrats were in control.
That's right.
And when I brought it back, Republicans were in control, and it passed 10-1.
So that's
346 people, I believe, applied for the board,
mm-hmm.
for 11 seats. So this is when I was really young and wet behind the ears, Mike. Yeah. I was
yeah.
really young, man. Golly.
Ronnie
recognized that guy.
Looked like you're out of high school there.
Yeah. Ronnie recognized that guy. Anyway.
What do you have to say about the so-called governor we have and his secret online voter ID scandal, which I think it is?
You know, going out of the state of North Carolina is not fun right now.
Oh.
Because when I meet people today, they when I tell them where I'm from, can you imagine how they...
Oh, please. I've gotten at least 250 emails from people across the country, mainly from New York, we're saying, and you want me to move down there with my kids? You're crazy.
I think when you start stomping on what can be perceived as somebody's constitutional rights,
right.
it's a problem.
Absolutely.
And for all the things that people have fought for in the way of your ability to be able to vote and to yet be challenged in a way that suppresses that convenience of voting, that's a problem.
Absolutely.
If you already have laws on the books that say, Pat Cannon, if you go in there and you try to vote more than once or abuse any part of the process of voting, you're going to face 5 years
mm-hmm.
in prison,
yeah.
fed time, not state. So you're not getting, I'm not cutting it 2.5 years. You're going to do every bit of 5 years. That ought to be enough to discourage me from doing anything that would cause that into question. Second, if there haven't been case after case after case after case after case, can I continue to go on and multiply that times, 3,000 more, as to there being any real reason or rationale for wanting to do something like this, it's a problem.
Well, out of 5 million votes, out of 5 million votes,
yeah.
123 were considered maybe were a problem.
Yes.
And that was people voting out of precinct. That was people forgetting that they didn't register. So this wasn't people that were purposely trying to influence the vote.
Well, and as you know, at this date, the NAACP and the ACLU have both filed a lawsuit.
And the Advancement Project is another one.
Yeah, and this is to go to a federal judge. I don't know who that judge is
mm-hmm.
right now, but
is that a district federal
wonder,
judge or is that federal judge? It must be a district.
I think it's
district.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
This is Eastern District. Okay.
So we'll see what happens with that, but it's to a portion happens at one point in 14, another portion happens in 16.
Mm-hmm.
As you talk about the IDs versus the scale back in early voting and whatnot, it does not affect early voting. Right now here in Charlotte, as
right.
you may know, early voting begins next Thursday,
right.
The 22nd in Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
And so It will not affect that per se, but I do believe that there was a thrust at one point to see what could have been done to even slow that process down. But you shouldn't work to, I don't think, disenfranchise people or try to slow them down in a process that has been made convenient for them and also could question whether or not you are violating their constitutional rights.
Well, what is it when you go to vote, what do you have to do when you vote?
When I go in, the lady just says
down
to me, I'm standing there, I'm looking, and she says, okay, what's your name? Give me your first and last name and state your address. I do that, and then I have to look down at some other information that she says for me to confirm it, which is my information I just gave her, and I sign off on it.
You sign off on it.
And I get my little ticket out of the spitter or the piece she tears off, and I walk right over to that booth, and I cast my vote for what I think is going to be good in the way of bonds
now,
or candidates.
If I wanted to vote for Patrick Cannon, if I wanted to be you and I went in and sat down and signed your name, because what I have seen in the past, they've looked at the signature compared to the other signature.
It's true.
So how is this possible? I mean, it doesn't even make any common sense.
You know how it's possible? Politics. That's how it's
absolutely
possible.
Well, I got to learn your signature. That's just a I can vote for you twice. But anyway.
Don't get you or me in trouble. Please, don't do it.
Hey, they did it in Chicago.
Let's leave it there.
We have, I think, one of the strong advocates we have in the state now is Roy Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
And this House and Assembly, Senate and Assembly, has given themselves the same power as the Attorney General. How is that possible? I guess it's possible because they write it. They write the laws.
Yeah, it's who's in power. I mean, what's the need of having an Attorney General if you're going to try to take over his role and or responsibilities?
And I know Tillis is not a lawyer.
Yeah.
So I don't know about the other regressive member. But what do you think, or what can you tell me, are the most important things that you need to do, you need to focus on, you need to see that gets done, especially if you have the backers in the city council, if you become mayor?
I think one of the obvious things that needs to be done is addressing the unemployment rate. To date, and mind you, the number's down from 102,000, but it's still around 80,000 mm-hmm. people that are unemployed right now, Michael. And in as much as we can work to change that, I want to be about that program, and as mayor would look to be about that program.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I will do is to, you heard me say this early in the show,
mm-hmm.
I want to begin to target those companies and or corporations to relocate to our city that offer blue-collar jobs. Today, in a
so
main,
we don't need another computer company.
Well, here's the deal.
You know, but, I mean, it would be nice, but yeah, we need, what you're saying, we need the people who work with their hands.
We need a balance.
We need a balance.
We need a balance.
Right.
And so I want those computer companies to stay.
Mm-hmm.
I want our financial service market to continue to be here. I want our healthcare industry to continue to be here and to flourish. I want us to do more in the area of research.
Mm-hmm.
But I still believe that there's a place for the common Jane and the common Joe that look for an opportunity that didn't have to require them to have
mm-hmm.
A PhD
mm-hmm.
or an engineering degree. Because mm-hmm. right now, if you ask somebody if we have manufacturers, they say, well, yeah, we got manufacturers, but you got to have an engineering degree to be one. Really?
Absolutely.
No, it shouldn't
absolutely.
Be that way.
Right.
It should not be that way. So I'm hoping that the days of McClancy, which was a pepper company,
mm-hmm.
The days of, you know, you really don't have textiles anymore. We used to have Cone Mill here.
Mm-hmm.
But the days of like Fruhoff and General Tire, we can begin to bring some of those companies back.
Mm-hmm.
Or companies like, not quite like them, but just, you get my point.
Right.
Labor companies that
right.
pay a very good wage,
mm-hmm.
and not $7.25 an hour,
right.
but a good wage that people can be able to earn a living. They can come out of high school and do it. Or if they're older and they're just looking for employment once again,
right.
they have some options.
Right.
And today what concerns me is that we don't have enough options. And I want to be a mayor to bring about those options for people. And so part of my platform is trying to see what we can do to create jobs by way of business development that's blue collar, still focusing on white collar, mm-hmm. but that is blue collar as well, to create a balance, which is what we need to have in this community.
Well, you know, you mentioned $7.25 an hour, and Costco is a major, major example mm-hmm. of how the average wage there is $15 or $17 an hour.
Yeah.
That's their average wage.
Mm-hmm.
And they have people, they have never, the average length of time people work there is more than 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the people are there 25 and 30 years mm-hmm. at Costco, because they give them enough wage to buy the products in the store.
Right.
And that's what Ford said, well, I'm building a car. What's going to happen? I'm going to build a car so my employees can buy it. I will sell it so they can buy it. So the thing is people need a living wage. They, you know, Texas talks about, Perry talks about, oh, we got more people here working. Yeah, they're all working at McDonald's and Burger King.
Right.
They're not working in a lifetime job or a 20-year job where they retire, where they have health care. Mm-hmm. So what is your, rounding this out here, what do you think as mayor, how can you influence companies that are here or that are going to come here to give the employees enough wage so they can live here and not have to go live out in Union County and travel here?
Well, sometimes, you know, some of those companies, Michael, want to be incentivized, and which means if they want your money,
mm-hmm.
my money, our money,
right.
They can't come to my doorstep and ask and say that $7.25 is going to be their wage.
Right.
That, so,
okay.
End of discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for coming. See you later. Bye. Okay. I don't think there's any more discussion beyond that. But
you talked about those 80,000 people.
Oh, yeah. You know, so, you know, my position would be that we make sure that we entertain those companies that really genuinely want to bring in wages that people can say, you know what, this is something that makes some sense to me. I can live off of it, or my family can live off of it, and we continue to try to make a better day for people to keep shoes on their feet, a roof over their head, clothes on their back, and food and water in their stomach,
mm-hmm.
Or whatever they would like to drink.
Yeah.
That's important. And so that's where I want to fall on the economic development side. Public safety. I still want to make sure that we are trying to become the most safe city that we can in America. That's important to me. I want to focus a lot of my attention also on domestic violence.
Mm.
That remains a major issue with
Absolutely.
Me, and I just think it's something we got to get our arms around and do better in terms of trying to make sure that nobody is being mentally or physically abused out there as best we can. You know, domestic homicides are really tough to get your arms around, because you know, it's the husband knowing the wife, or the cousin knowing the cousin, or
mm-hmm.
the kid against his mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had some situations like that. Not quite in Charlotte. Incidents took place in Pineville like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to focus on that, and also housing. Trying to make sure that we are providing housing for the least of those who can afford market rate housing. I'm one of those kids that grew up in public housing, so I know what it is to really be on a fixed and sometimes a no income, and being brought up to, you know, be in a place that we can afford and still be a loving home, and remind people that it's not where you're from, but it's where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
But you still got to be conscious of the idea that you have people out there in the marketplace that are veterans, that are disabled, that are seniors, that are homeless, that need some level of housing. And so I want to make sure that for the 18,000 to 25 some odd thousand units that we are short, that we find a way to build upon lessening that number.
Mm.
That's going to be important.
Well, I was going to ask you to wrap up your message, but you just did.
I think so. We can call that a wrap up.
That's a wrap.
Yeah.
And I just want to thank Mayor Pro Tem Patrick Cannon from Charlotte, who is a candidate to become the mayor of Charlotte, North Carolina, the largest city in the state.
That's right.
Largest city in the state.
That's right.
And the most influential city in the state. And now we have a ex-mayor who is the Secretary of Transportation.
That's right.
Who's going to help us get some money for those cars that we need going up the North Corridor.
God willing.
God willing. Okay, this was Michael Lawson, and this has been The Last Word interview with Patrick Cannon, but we will be hearing from him now and then, at least once a week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, that was the interview with Patrick Cannon, and I, you know, there's still some questions out there, but I asked him if he could call in, and he said he would, so you got a chance to ask him some more questions. Right now, we have on the phone Mr. Matt Newton. How are you, Matt?
Great, great. It's great to be here, Michael. Thank you so much for having me.
And did you have a chance to listen to any of the interview?
I did. I think I jumped on around 3:15, and I heard the most of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, what were some of the questions that you had that you would like to have asked him if you were doing the interview?
Myself, I've done an extensive amount of research on the Citizens Review Board issue, as you know, Michael, and I've been working in conjunction with a number of community organizations, including the NAACP and the ACLU, A. Philip Randolph Institute, Democracy North Carolina, Action NC, on and on and on. And we have come across a number of instances where folks don't feel like they're being listened to or responded to from the internal affairs side of the process. Mm-hmm. Of course, we're of the opinion that by strengthening the Citizens Review Board, and this is an issue that quite frankly makes the makeup for the time being a moot issue, but by strengthening the Citizens Review Board, we address their concerns. I think that there is a lot of myths and disinformation in the public sphere right now. And part of the challenge that we face is presenting that information so that people are fully educated as to what is going on. I wanted to comment on a few things, not necessarily anything, and I think that the Mayor Pro Tem did a wonderful job summarizing the issue as well as the process, but there were a couple of points I was hoping to clarify.
Well, if you can, I got some more callers. I'll give you another 5 minutes, another 7 minutes.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Sure. It's certainly effective that, and I think it's a good idea to have the Community Relations Committee be a part of the process to field complaints once they're filed. However, those complaints, and let's make no mistake about this, those complaints still go to Internal Affairs. It's not as though the Community Relations Committee is any more involved than they are in simply handing those complaints over. At that point, the citizen is on their own, and that's where I feel like we have received and fielded complaints from citizens who aren't responded to during the process. There is no Internal Affairs directive, and I think this is an important point to make. No Internal Affairs directive that requires Internal Affairs to stay in contact with the citizen. And so many citizens, after they file their initial complaint, whether it be through the police department itself or through the Community Relations Department, once they file that complaint, they never hear from Internal Affairs again. And let's be clear about the fact that the officer who is the subject of the complaint has the opportunity under Internal Affairs directives to choose someone who will be on the very board that will be deciding his fate.
Matt, you're saying that the officer, the police officer, can choose who he wants to be on the civilian review board or can choose who's going to represent him?
He can choose because there are two boards in play. There's one that's created by internal.
Matt. Can you hear me, Matt? Choose which way?
Yes.
He chooses on the civilian review board or chooses who represents him?
There are two boards in play here. The initial process is one through internal affairs. And internal affairs will initially make a decision that is either, that is sent to the police chief. And the board in internal affairs that makes that decision, the police officer, under internal affairs directives, has the opportunity and every single one of them has the opportunity to pick an individual, whether it be his partner or someone within his department, to sit on that very board. And
okay, but we'll,
it's not the citizens review board, it's the internal affairs board.
Matt,
yes.
Do they have the ability then, if he chooses to be on the board, to vote for him or against him?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well,
and we're not talking about...
How is it even possible?
Yeah, well, that's just it. That's just it, Michael. Yeah, I'm just as outraged, right? Because that's just it. The fact of the matter is that's the internal affairs process. And granted, that is certainly a larger mountain to climb, isn't it? We're talking about a process to strengthen the Citizens Review Board to hold that internal affairs process more accountable to the citizen. And I think when you understand what the ordinary citizen is up against here, it certainly is reasonable to suggest that the Citizens Review Board be given power such as subpoena power, be given the power to review internal affairs files, bring police officers in front of them, the power to potentially do more than simply make an advisory opinion. These are things that will, in effect, also hold internal affairs more accountable to the citizen.
Well, you see, but Matt, I don't understand the process. If there's been a problem with a police officer, and then you're supposed to go to a civilian review board to find out whether or not the officer was at fault or wasn't at fault, that the officers could pick somebody to sit on that board. I thought the board already had its members. How did you add somebody, additional person?
No, it's the process. The process is one that goes through internal affairs in the first place, and then you appeal from the internal affairs decision. What we have found is that people aren't getting justice in internal affairs. Now, having said that, certainly you aren't including people or adding people to the board. The board is what it is. What we're saying is give that board the power it needs to do its job, and in effect be a proper check on internal affairs.
Right, no, I understand. And Patrick talked about whether or not the board should have subpoena powers or this or that, and maybe they should be more inclined to be someone that's familiar with the law or whatnot. I said, we don't have that with the jury system. And he recognized that because he beat me to the punch and said it. So the thing is that we have to realize that if you're under investigation, you can't self-evaluate. I mean, that's almost the same thing like saying what Mitt Romney said, self-deport. I mean, that doesn't even make any common sense. So that we need to go into this a lot further because this is just convoluted as far as I'm concerned. And you see, I did not know that when I was asking the mayor – pro tem, because I would have asked him about that. And I will ask him about that when he calls it again.
It's within internal affairs. Now, granted, the Citizens Review Board has no teeth.
Okay, you're talking about that this process where they're adding somebody to a board, that's only internal affairs. That's not the
Citizens Review. Internal affairs.
I don't care about what happens.
It's even more reason why we need to strengthen the Citizens Review Board. And let's face it, we can talk about the makeup of the board, but what does any of that matter if the board in the first place doesn't have the teeth or the power it needs to do its job, job that was put there to do in 1997?
This is the bottom line, what I was talking to Patrick about, that the daggone board should not be controlled and managed by the city manager. And he said, the process right now is the city manager is doing it. City manager works for the city council. And as he said, you need to hold the city council members responsible. Vote their butts out if you don't like how it's going on. Okay, but I don't think we need to go that late if you have a citizen review board that's actually a citizen review board.
Yes, precisely. One that can do its job. We hear so much talk about Charlotte nearly becoming L.A. Well, let's face it. That's what L.A. has. L.A. has a board where the citizens make the final decision. And if we were so close to that. And in the same respect, I don't know how much has changed because over the last 13 months, we have had five deaths that were the result of officer-related shootings. If that's the case, then why don't we have a board that's more commensurate to the board in, on the board in Los Angeles?
Well, that's a great. We got another minute.
Yeah, I'm just going to say the point of all of it should be to have true accountability and to raise citizens, you know, respect and stuff for the institutions. They should have confidence that they have true, you
right.
know, review and true saying and a fair process.
Right, absolutely.
That should be the whole point.
That's the point. Right.
And the point of all of this machinations back and forth is that, you know, who gets to appoint what and what secret this and unelected board members that. And screw all that. That is what is eroding
confidence absolutely.
Of the public.
Right. And the bottom line is that if we have a competent citizen review board, we will have more confidence in our police department.
Exactly.
It's as simple as that. All right, Matt, well, we need to go, but I want you to call in next week because and I want to give you more time to explain. See, because what you were telling me, I got it all screwed up. I thought you were talking about the Citizen Review Board when you actually talk about internal affairs. I think you need to break down and explain every single step from the process when someone has a problem to the process that they do to get it to a Citizen Review Board.
You got it, Michael. If I may, too, we do have a meeting coming up on Monday. This is the Council Manager Committee, the very committee that will be deciding the fate of this issue. That will be at 11:30 at the Government Center, room 280. There will be a presentation given by the Council or the Community Relations Committee Executive Director. And at that particular time, we will be asking Council Manager to make the final determination on this. Back in on April 1st, Mayor Fox had said the process should take no longer than 90 days. Well, we were told 148 days on Monday, so it's high time that our council members in that particular committee make a decision. This gets it back to city council floor.
Absolutely. I thank you, Matthew. That's Matt Newton.
Thank you so much for having me.
On the case with the Citizen Review Board. And he is a lawyer. And how can someone get a hold of you, Matt?
Let me give you our office number. It's area code 704-280-8493. We can also be contacted at newtonarroyolaw@yahoo.com. That's NEWTONARROYO, law@yahoo.com. You can find out more about the Citizens Review Board and CRB Reform at CRBReform.com. And you can also go on Facebook, CRB Reform Now. Once again, okay. CRBReform.com.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And we have our own doctor in the house who's going to take care of you. That's what you got to do. Say ah.
Ah.
Yes, is Dr. Grace Lee Galloway.
Well,
How is Joe today?
Joe's doing so much better. We're in Greensboro right now for the SEC meeting tomorrow. Looking forward to it.
You could have been live with me. I thought I would have known that.
Well, heck, you know, here I am.
I'm going to be up there tomorrow morning with Del's one.
Looking forward to it, buddy.
And,
looking forward to it.
Right now, you're very familiar with this gentleman. And I want you to hear what he just said a couple of days ago.
Hi, I'm Governor Pat McCrory. The integrity of our election process is vital to our democracy, which is why I've signed today several common sense reforms into law, including voter ID. Photo ID has become a part of our everyday life. You need a photo ID to board an airplane, to cash a check, or even apply for most government benefits. In fact, just recently, both Democrats and Republicans joined together to require a valid government-issued photo ID to buy Sudafed at your local corner drugstore. Our right to vote deserves similar protection. In fact, for voters who may not even have a photo ID, they can get one at no charge at a nearby DMV office throughout the state. To ensure everyone has enough time, photo ID won't be required until the 2016 elections. Let me be direct. Many of those from the extreme left who have been criticizing photo ID are using scare tactics. They're more interested in divisive politics than ensuring that no one's vote is disenfranchised by a fraudulent ballot. Protecting the integrity of every vote cast is among the most important duties I have as governor. And it's why I signed these common sense, commonplace protections into law. Thank you very much.
You know what, Michael?
How many of our citizens have what I call the goo-goo syndrome?
Goo-goo syndrome.
Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Well, what do
all I can say, you know, Pat McCrory and the Republicans, they have some brass of accusing other people of doing exactly what they're doing. That really, that just gets me.
It's not Pat McCrory, it's Otto. He runs the state government. It ain't Pat McCrory. Pat McCrory can't find his way home. Are you kidding? I mean, that's a joke. You think Pat McCrory's running this government? He didn't run the city of Charlotte when he was the mayor here, because Duke Power did, because he worked for them for 25 years. And now he's up there. Now he's got Duke Power and Art Pope running the government. This man's a fraud. He's a fraud.
Well, he is, but more. Pertinent, I think, is the fact that these accusations are being made about the extreme left that they're actually doing themselves. Like I said, he's got some brass. He's got some brass accusing other people of doing precisely what he's doing himself. I just,
absolutely.
You know, that just gets me. It's, and of course, now you know what's going on in Watauga County, right?
No, what's going on?
Watauga County. Oh, in Watauga County, out there in Boone, and I know Watauga County quite well because remember I used to work up in Wilkes, and so I know Wilkes and Watauga quite well. In Watauga County, what they've done is that they're not accepting that. We know they're not accepting that student ID, but they've removed the one student's
DMV.
Vote, and they vote quite regularly. So they have taken the one and only student, the one and only election site from the actual campus, and they've moved it clear across the other end of town. That's to stop the students from voting.
How do students get there?
Well, you know, I guess it's just tough luck.
Is there any train transportation, bus transportation, free service?
No. No.
Yeah, I guess not.
Yeah. And they cut the number of days, of course. They've reduced the number of polling sites, of course.
Yep.
And what we have, don't forget, what we have is that, you know, we have about 9,300 people per polling site. They've not increased the number of polling sites since, I don't know, 1950?
Well, you know.
In the 1950s, it used to be 1,500 per polling site. Now we have 9,300 per polling site. I guess it's okay. I mean,
that's illegal aliens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, look, this is the problem that gets me, that the Republicans definitely do all the time. You know, the statement they make sounds nice and kind, even legitimate on service. Like when everybody uses photo IDs, you have to
just
one thing.
Yeah, we always say that.
Okay. Yeah. The point is, the reality of them all, when you look at the details, is total restriction across the board. You know, like, all IDs are good. Well, except for student, and except for this, and except for that, you know. And so, again,
right.
It's just putting more obstacles
The reason why that is completely stupid, except for the stupid people, is because you don't need, it's not in the Constitution that you need an ID to cash a check or to get on a plane. So how can
you and cashing a check, having a bank account and getting on a plane is a choice.
Right.
It's not a right. It's a choice. Okay, so
right.
If I choose to fly, then I understand that I have to abide by those rules. But voting is a right. You know, even though some people say it's not a right, I don't know, you know, so there are people that argue that the Constitution does not guarantee a person to vote, which, you know, you can twist that any way you want, but it really does. I mean, it's implied,
it's implied
to the point where it's not accepted.
Well, using Republican logic, we should all hold our shoes in our hands and shuffle in a line to get the voting poll.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. No. Well, this new restrictive voting law that's set up in North Carolina is not, if not the strictest, one of the two restrictive voting laws in the country, which requires North Carolinians to all have a voter ID. That means a government-issued voter ID. It also restricts the voting by 1 week. It eliminates same-day registration. So, you know, don't worry about those working-class people that work 12 to 15 hours a day and 7 days a week and don't have time to go off and register, then come back and vote the same time because their boss won't let them off. Forget those people. And also end statewide voter registration drives. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean, statewide voter registration drives?
Well, it's whatever you choose you want it to mean. You know,
that's right.
Whatever you want it to mean. It's so nebulous. Right. It's whatever you want it to mean.
That the Democratic Party cannot hold a voter registration drive?
Mm-hmm. No.
I mean, is that what that means?
Well, they put the restrictions on it so that there's so many restrictions to it, and there's so many you can do this except that you know, honestly, we have to read that. The bottom line is this. The bottom line is the restrictions that have been placed upon voting and upon obtaining upon a voter registration drive, they're so onerous that, of course, the whole objective is to stop Democrats from voting. I mean,
I was going to get to that. See, in North Carolina, the population of non-whites is 30%.
Mm-hmm.
The early vote count for non-whites is 33%. The white voters with IDs are 46%.
Mm-hmm.
That means so white voters with no IDs is 54%. I mean, so what are they trying? They're going to lose doing it this way. If just the non-whites vote, and just a few people who are non-white get another 10%, another 12-13% get voter IDs, they will lose.
Mm-hmm.
Means that you have to have all 46% at least of their of the white group to vote. We don't need all 46%. We don't need all 33%. See, this is the problem with them. The mathematics is, well, they don't believe in science and they don't believe in math.
Right.
So it's showing it every day.
That's why they
This bill that our governor, and I say it laughingly, signed.
I understand.
He did not even read. Man not read it. He said so.
Yeah.
And he can't deny it because it's on YouTube. Him saying, I didn't read it all. And I should have played it, but I didn't copy it. I thought I had it down here. But this is completely outrageous.
Well, to think that a sitting governor doesn't even sign, I mean, doesn't even read what he's signing.
Well, the problem is, and that shows you that Art Polk is actually running this government. Art Polk. And this is a major problem that we have. Tell us something about the SEC meeting that's happening for the Democratic Party tomorrow. Executive Committee.
The State Executive Committee meeting, we have some business to accomplish, of course, and one of we have to adopt the plan of organization as it has been amended, and that, you know, that sort of housekeeping stuff. But most importantly is we have to elect a first vice chair. And right now, the only person that's officially thrown her hat in the ring is Gwen Wilkins. Now, I know Gwen. And I know Gwen quite well. And I know Gwen to be an unabashed Democrat who has always worked for the ideals of the grassroots and for democratic principles, period. She's not the kind of person following rules is one thing, okay? But she doesn't follow rules blindly, all right? She analyzes. She looks at what's right and what's wrong. Because remember, everything that Hitler did in Germany was legal. It was perfectly legal. Everything that he did was legal, precisely. So, you know, you can always say, well, we've got to follow the rules, but you can do that and dig yourself right into a grave. Mm-hmm. You know? If Martin Luther King had followed the rules as they were in his time, we wouldn't have civil rights today. If Rosa Parks had followed the rules, we'd still be sitting in the back of the bus. You've heard this from me a lot, you know, many, many times, right? If Mahatma Gandhi had followed the rules, India would still be a British protectorate, okay? And if Nelson Mandela had followed the rules, we'd still have apartheid in South Africa. These are just a few examples, just a very few examples. So the rules are made by whoever's in power, okay? And whoever's in power, unfortunately, generally makes rules to keep themselves in power or their friends in power. Unfortunately, that's the way it is, and I wish it wasn't, but we have to understand it and admit that that's the way it is. Okay, when the rules were originally made that only allowed landowners to vote, remember, a long time ago, that was a rule. If you were a landowner, you could vote. If you didn't own land, money, you couldn't vote.
With Art Polk in there, that might be the next bill that's going to be passed.
That very well might be. But what I'm saying, to get back to the SEC, you know, my whole thing is that this is what I love about Gwen Wilkins, is that Gwen is a thoughtful person. Okay, right. She actually analyzes and thinks about her decisions and her steps before she makes a step or she actually does something. This is what I love about her. And this is why I'm completely in support of Gwen. Linda Coleman has endorsed Gwen. Gail Cunningham has endorsed Gwen. So I feel like I'm in really good company.
I am for Gwen also. Do you think there's a chance, she will be there, I hope, at the meeting tomorrow.
Yes, she will be. Yes, she will be. Absolutely.
Okay. Uh-huh. Something else I wanted to get to before you go is, what about Kay Hagan? I'm just reading. Kay Hagan sent a letter to Attorney General Eric Holder. That she was deeply concerned that the new law, which includes a requirement that voters bring photo ID to the polls, will deny voting rights to minorities, young people, the elderly, and the poor. Protecting the fundamental right of our citizens to vote should be among the federal government's highest priorities. Kay Hagan has done an excellent job as our senator, and we need to do everything possible to get her, well, legally, that is, back in office. Now, is there a chance that Kay might be at this SEC meeting?
That Kay might be here? I understand that she's very well be at this. Yeah, Kay Hagan, exactly. Senator Kay. Love her.
Good.
Love her to pieces. There's a good chance that she will be here, and if certainly not at the SEC meeting, she'll be at the Senate Hunt 5 tomorrow night.
Very good. Okay, I will be there also.
That's the baby speaking in his mind. You have to understand.
What about What do you think about the, or have you had a chance to think about these stop and frisk policies in New York City?
In New York City? Well, you know, I think that's just a wonderful thing. I really do. I mean, let's get rid of this thing. I mean, if I wanted somebody to steal my body, I'll call my husband. Really? Seriously.
You have that chance if our Pope introduced that here, and that could happen.
Oh,
why
it
not?
Could happen. It could happen,
sure, I mean,
you know.
Paul, he's a wonderful guy, right? Anyway, the thing is, what has happened with the health clinics? What has been happening?
We are inundated, Michael. I cannot tell you. We are inundated with just people who need health care. We've increased our hours, and we've increased our hours, and we may have to increase them again. It's just so sad. People that have Medicaid are being dropped off the rolls.
Really?
Yeah. Dropped off the rolls. I'm telling you. Yesterday, I got a whole list of people that just, quote, lost their Medicaid.
But why?
But, that's a good question. They don't know why. They're still just as sick. You know?
Why are people being dropped from Medicare? I mean, have
Medicaid.
They checked out?
It's funding. No, Medicaid.
Oh.
Medicaid.
Oh,
it's the funding.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Medicaid.
Well, but
that's the funding.
That's because the state has defunded that terribly.
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah. I'm sure that has a lot to do with it. And we don't know, and these poor people are out there now fighting Medicaid trying to figure out why they've been dropped. I mean, we have diabetics with insulin-dependent diabetics who are half-blind, and they've been dropped.
How is Medicaid funded? Isn't some of that money, doesn't some of that money come from the federal government?
Some of it comes from the federal government, and then some of it comes from the state. Now, since they've refused the federal government funding, then, you know, they can only rely on whatever the state funding is, so that has a lot to do with it.
Okay, but can't the federal government now say, well, look, if you don't want this, we won't give
it'll
you
go
this.
Somewhere else. It'll go to another state. This is what I'm saying. They turned down $15.5 billion. Well, the $15.5 billion will go somewhere. Okay, it'll go to another state. Another state has accepted it. So, you know, Jan Brewer out there, she'll take it.
Yes,
Christie will take it. Indeed. So the $15.5 billion that's supposed to come to North Carolina will go somewhere else. That's what people don't get. And these idiots are out there saying, we have to defund Obamacare. Look, the only way you can defund Obamacare is if you shut the whole government down. And they've got fools out there that think that it's not going to matter. They think that they can do this and the veterans will still continue to get benefits. That the air traffic controllers, the policemen, the firefighters, they think all of that will continue. Well, it won't. It won't. This is what they don't get.
Well, see, the only chance of them defunding Obamacare is by the entire government. The House getting 2/3. Of every state to vote for. That's one way to repeal a constitutional amendment, and this is now a constitutional amendment. So how can they do that? 2/3 of the country is not going to do that?
No, it's not. But remember, the people, these Republicans that are out there putting out TV ads about defunding Obamacare, they're catering to their base. Because they're terrified of being primary.
Absolutely. You're right. You're absolutely
right. And that's all it is.
Well, but what happens?
So they can say, well, we try, you know?
Now, what happens to the people who are no longer on Medicaid? They go to the hospital, correct?
Yes. Or they come
to
us. In Cabarrus County, they can come to us at the free clinic. Okay?
Okay.
We are very advanced as far as that's concerned. Right.
Well, suppose they go to the emergency room. They go to the emergency room, which costs five times more than it would. Well, it wouldn't cost anything going to the clinic, I guess, but five times more than a regular if they didn't have insurance. So now the burden is on the hospital to pay for it. Yeah, they pass it on to us, but then those hospitals go out of business because the larger hospitals will buy.
That's right.
Which is, an endless success model for this, pirate capitalism that they have, where everything relies on the corporation and the mega corporation win.
Right.
That's their model for success. There is no private anything. There is no personal anything.
Oh, Big Brother.
They're like the greatest corporation wins. So their world is the maximum profit for the maximum amount of corporations. But the problem with all of this, this whole argument, the endless votes against Obamacare and the let's repeal it again, all these other symbolic gestures they keep doing.
Right.
We've gotten very dangerously close in this country to I'm tired of this. I'm getting very sick of the I'm scared of a primary, so then I'll say anything as outlandish as impossible just to satisfy the base, quote unquote. It's all BS. But there's this rhetoric of anti-everything, anti-Americanism, anti-government, anti-anything that functions. Which is that so popular that we not only senators on like people here that have gone in, and we've not only got people, but now one of the leading voices for this, we'll say the GOP, but for the remainder of the GOP, what's left is now Rand Paul, the son of the government, and besides the ludicrous of it, that these people are against government in every form, against taxes, everything else, war, anything you can think of. But they're against everything that's serving the government and wanting to lead the government. That they're against. But that absurdity, the fact that these are even remotely valid candidates with power in this country is frightening. Because it's destabilizing the entire country. Because they live on destroying things, tearing things down, not building anything up. All they want is the supposed Rand ideal of the individual,
right?
Where there is no anything, there is no government, and they consider any form of government help or aid and all that to be completely anti-human. So they want it all done away with. This is that's they're literally all these things that run around saying we read Ayn Rand every year and we talk about the prince and all that. Well, read the books. They talk about pirate politics and rampant individualism of the psychopathic nature, where it's just ego over everything, and you should literally just take and steal and shoot for you. And everybody else can just go with,
We have another caller right here, William Wild. Hello, caller. Who's this? Hello? Hello? Well, can't hear the caller. Anyway,
You lost somebody. Did you lose somebody? You lost someone.
Well, no, I did do it on purpose. I called you. I don't know who it is. But anyway,
this is a problem. We've got non-functionality, and it's becoming detrimental to our country because, just like this, not help anyone and throw them to the wolves, and let's not have Obamacare or whatever you want to call it. Let's not have any health care unless you're a multimillionaire who can afford your own doctors. It's dangerous, but it pervades everything. Look at across the board. They don't want, government regulation of anything.
Right.
They don't want government regulation. They say the main thing that you hear is they don't want government regulation of businesses and things of that nature. They list the free market, but they mean for everything. There'll be no safety nets.
Right.
No help for anyone in any way. You see our governor, the first act when in office was to cut any kind of aid to people out of work.
Right.
In their world, it's just you're damn tough luck. Get up and do something. You know, if you don't have $1 million, it's because you're a loser.
That's an extra
yeah, right. Exactly. It's your own fault that you don't have money. The fact that we cut you off the knees, you know, and we did everything and we did everything we can to stop you, to deny you work and everything, but it's your fault because you're just not, you just don't have to get up and go, buddy. You know?
You're not just about to succeed. Let's
try this caller one more time. Hello, caller, you there? Hello? I guess they just wanted to listen.
Who are you trying to get?
I have no idea. But anyway, we're going to elect someone tomorrow for what position?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What position? First vice chair, right? Okay.
First
now
vice
you
chair
said,
is part of the party. Mm-hmm.
Is part of, okay, now Gwen Wilkins has thrown a hat in the ring again. Well, she was vice chair one time, right?
She was. Yes, she was. Yes.
She knows the job. She knows the job.
Pardon me? She does.
She knows.
Absolutely. No question.
Now, so I guess at this time, at 20 minutes to 5 or so in on a Friday, I guess whoever wants to run then needs to throw their hat in the ring while they're up there.
She's the only one that at this point in time that has had the guts to throw her hat in the ring. My position is this. If you really want the job, throw your hat in the ring. Don't be having somebody nominate you from the floor.
Absolutely. I don't know why people do that. Really, the problem is though that we have more than enough people here that that can do this job, but we just need it done right.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. We need to done right.
We need it done right. Precisely.
What else can you tell us about the, one other thing before you go, healthcare. How has Obamacare affected the people in North Carolina so far?
Affordable Care Act.
The Affordable Care Act.
Unfortunately, the Affordable Care Act, not as well as it could have been had it been completely implemented and could these fools up in Raleigh, you know, done what they were supposed to do. They decided it's done a good job. Now, here's the thing. You've got idiots out there saying that, you know, your insurance premiums are going up exponentially, they're saying. No, they're not. They're not going up exponentially. And if they do go up exponentially, it's not because of the Affordable Care Act. It's because the third-party payers, like Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Aetna, United Healthcare, those third-party payers, they're increasing their rates. Why? Because you got to absorb the cost somewhere. So these people that are going into the emergency room, you know, and getting care for a cold that's costing $5,000, it just goes around and around. My head spins when I think about it.
But you know, because the thing is that what you're talking about, you're right. We have people who are who don't get the message that they now can get subsidized health care with the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and they can go to a doctor or a clinic and get subsidized care. They don't have to go to the emergency room for a sniffle or a cold and sit for 4 hours.
Right.
It's complete nonsense. And when they can't afford that, and I am sure that with the subsidized health care, because even at that, it's reduced according to what you have, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I know myself because I pay my youngest daughter's health care, and she's over 21. I'm paying over 26. She's 32, 31. I am paying her health care, and I'm telling you, I got back a check in September of last year because of the Affordable Health Care Act, and B, because it's mandated. If they don't use 80% of the premium on you,
they
gotta give some back.
Yeah.
But part of the problem, Mike, isn't just, and I hate to always blame, you know, the people. It's not always the people. Part of the problem is there is so much disinformation and fear-mongering out there that is very confusing.
Right.
You know, the most well-intentioned person in the world can't quite keep up because every other person is screaming, you know, the world is burning down, the world is burning down, you know, and it's demonized it so much that you still, I mean, every once in a while you run into places where people say, do they still do death panels or something? You're just beating your head against the wall going, oh, my God, are we still having this conversation?
Do we still have
this
conversation?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
we're still having this conversation. It's amazing. Yeah. They have. They've done a very good job of fear tactics. And that's why I said, we started this conversation with Pat McCrory, listening to him, and I said, that man has some brass accusing other people of doing what he's doing. There you go. They're using the fear tactics, but they accuse us of using of being the ones that are fear-mongering. You know? It's just so amazing what we are doing, and I just went through this whole thing with some people today. What we're doing, stick to the issues, guys, okay? What we are doing, what I'm doing, trying to do, I mean, let me not just say we, let me personalize this enough. What I'm doing is sticking to the issues. What I'm doing is saying, look, if you want to debate something with me, debate it accurately, okay? Don't bring in extraneous, quote-unquote, facts. They're not facts because they're half-truths. All right?
Yes.
And just look, if I'm walking down the street getting from A to B, don't argue about why I'm not going to D. All right? I need to get from A to B. So don't bring in all this other stuff. Let's talk about the facts, the issue, let's deal with the issue at hand. But people don't know how to do that anymore. People don't know how to debate an issue. What they do is they argue. And in arguing, they ask for the mark.
But the problem is they don't want to debate issue where they might come up short. They want, just like a bait, they want what they want they want it. That's it. They want what they want it. And if that's the problem we have now with these people. They it's not about debating. They don't want to debate because they know they lose the debate.
Yep.
So that's where we're at with this. But I want to give you and take care of the baby and see about Joe. And I will see you up there tomorrow.
I'll see you tomorrow.
And
okay.
With bells on. And
absolutely.
I just hope that the senator can be up there so she can give us a real good pep talk.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see her because I want to get her on the show.
Very good.
All right.
All right. I'll see you tomorrow, Michael.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And that is Grace's Corner for today. We will see Dr. Grace Ling and the baby up there in Greensboro tomorrow. Registration starts at 9 o'clock. Be there or be square. Thank you.
I want to have a little moment.
I heard him. Was the guy that he wrote something?
Yeah. He was famous. Where's Waldo?
Where's Waldo?
Here's a poem, though, that he wrote.
Yes.
It perfectly encapsulates what we got going on here in this here horror fest of
This here horror fest?
This here horror fest of common sense deficit.
Of no sense deficit.
Yeah, you know, and by the way, I don't want to pick on the common people.
The common people.
The common people have been misled.
That's what I like.
And they just need to start stepping up.
But isn't it the common people, the Republicans, keep telling us who created this country and our Constitution?
Well, true.
It's a lie. It wasn't the common people who did that. It was people who were landowners. The only people that could vote. They didn't get women. children, don't matter what color you are, if you're a woman or a child, black, white, purple, green, you couldn't vote.
True.
So, I mean, what was it? Every time I hear that common thing, I'm so sick of it. Ain't nothing common about it. Please. All right, go ahead.
So the point is, though,
yes.
I think it's the common people.
Yeah, all
the
common
victims
people.
Need
poor victims.
To pay attention, to their lives, or else they're going to have it taken away from them.
You know, the old Living Color joke. He said, "You were poor." See, I was poor. He said, "You were so poor you couldn't pay attention." Oh, okay.
And that's part of the problem. Unfortunately, these people work too hard. They don't have time to look into details and all
good.
That. But they're going to have to start because they're having the carpet pulled up.
We're losing it.
Yeah.
They got to start. We're losing it.
They're going to lose everything. You know, there's been a concerted, 50-year war against the Great Society, which is our,
the greatest.
The entire modern age,
society.
I think. We called it the greatest generation for a reason. But not only did they win a world war, they helped their neighbors. They helped the poor. They helped the elderly. You know, they set up Social Security. They set up all the working. Let's rebuild America. Let's build interstate systems. Let's build parks. Let's do. They did all of those social. Socialism. You know, they did all those kind of
those community relations.
Social Security, things like that.
Right.
But that's what we should do to bring each other, not hurt each other. Anyway, so Ralph Waldo Emerson said this. The water understands civilization well. It wets my foot, but prettily, and it chills my life, but wittily. It is not disconcerted, and it is not brokenhearted. For well used, it decketh joy, and adorneth, it'll doubleth joy. But ill used, it will destroy. In perfect time and measure, with the face of golden pleasure, it will elegantly destroy.
Hey.
And that's what we got going on here.
Hey.
Some people think that, hey, you know what? Making money is a good thing, and it'd be even better if I could just rape and pillage and take everything everybody else has.
I just want to say, we are lucky to be in America.
We are.
And I just like to just have this little minute and 20-second interlude.
When the news is all bad, when you're sour and blue, when you start to get mad, you should do what I do. Tell yourself how lucky you are. When the fates are unkind, when your life's going wrong, when you're limping along and get kicked from behind, tell yourself how lucky you are. Why decry a cloudy sky, an empty purse, a crazy universe? My philosophy is simply things could be worse. So be happy you're here. Think of life as a thrill. And if worse comes to worse, as we all know it will, thank your lucky star you've gotten this far. And tell yourself, how lucky you are.
How lucky you are. That's what our Pope and the half governor, is he half? Yeah, because he hadn't even been half governor yet. He's only been, eight months? That's what they're telling us here. How lucky you all are in North Carolina. You got us managing every single thing you do. Yes, sir, I love it. I love it. I love it. But you know what? We're only lucky if we get rid of these idiots. And then it won't be luck at all. They, I said this time and time and time again. These guys are dead. It's just like when you cut off the head of a snake. When you cut off the head of the snake, the body of the snake keeps moving back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, because it doesn't know it's dead. So we just got a larger snake. It's a larger snake. The head's in the garbage already. know, the birds have plucked out the eyes.
And that's why they like to use that new flag with the snake chopped up.
Oh, yeah.
That's their
new logo. Ooh, love that. Love it. Love it. Yes. Well, you know, boy, I sure feel lucky. Yeah, that song just gets me going. It makes my blood go. I just love that song. How lucky you are. You know, we are so daggone lucky here in this. You know what? I just feel so wonderful. I just feel so wonderful. I got to play it again.
When the news is all bad, when you're sour and blue, when you start to get mad, you should do what I do. Tell yourself how lucky you are. When the fates are unkind, when your life's going wrong, when you're limping along and get kicked from behind, tell yourself how lucky you are. Why decry a cloudy sky, an empty purse, a crazy universe? My philosophy is simply things could be worse. So be happy you're here. Think of life as a thrill. And if worse comes to worse, as we all know it will, thank your lucky star you got this far. And tell yourself how lucky you are. How lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky you are.
How lucky, how lucky, how lucky you are. I tell you, we are so lucky that we can have Art Pope running this state. I mean, and then a backup of Pat McCrory. How lucky we are.
It's kind of like Mr. Rourke and Tattoo.
Yeah.
It may be. We'll luck out, and our fantasy would be chosen.
Oh,
we'd be one of the lucky
man. Art Pope has to be Mr. Rourke.
The magic. He's got the old puppet, you know. The plan.
That's what he says. The voter ID, the voter ID, the voter ID. That's what he's saying.
I think it said fracking.
Fracking? Oh, fracking. Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Fracking A, man.
Yes, it's a fracking good time we're having here. Now, speaking about. Tattoo.
You know what that song reminded me of, by the way?
What's it?
I don't know why, but Little Orphan Annie. Daddy Warbuck. You know? Even in the bleakest of
times. Whoa, we got Art Pope. That's Daddy Warbuck.
I know. So even in the darkest days, you know, you still have time for
yeah,
a song and a dance.
Yeah, I tell you. You know, this bill for the voter ID we'll just have to call him Tattoo. McCrory.
Okay.
Tattoo says.
Make
own tattoo. He says that this bill provides free IDs are going to be offered at every motor vehicle. Oh, you mean the one in York County just closed? The only one? You got to go another 100 miles to get a DMV. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. This is not Texas.
No.
So you got to go another 25 miles to get one? You mean you don't have a car? Because you live out in the boondocks and you wait for the your friend to come by in the pickup to take you into town, or you call your cousin who lives in Roanoke to come up and take you. He's up. Right. So, it's still, you can get it at the DMV through the state. Though the state estimates that between 203,351 and 318,643 voters registered in North Carolina lack voter ID.
Yeah. So which state was it? Which one was it that is out west, the Colorado or somewhere like that, that's being sued right now?
They're all being sued.
No, but they have such a huge backlog. They're refusing to. They've got hundreds of thousands of voter registrations. They're just sitting on. They refuse to even process.
It's worse than 300,000?
They're just trying to suppress votes. I mean, it's so blatant that they're being sued.
That says here that this is the voters registered who lack ID and that providing them with one would cost. You ready for this?
Okay.
$834,200.
That sounds free.
And that's in 2013. In 2014, it would cost $24,100 every 2 years after. Now,
free.
Where's that money coming from? Oh, I know where it's coming from. It's coming from that Medicaid they're no longer giving to the people in North Carolina.
It's just magical money. It's all free.
Oh, by the way. Oh, wait. I'm not even finished yet. Do you know? Let me tell you this.
If it's coming from that freaking tax.
Let me tell you this. My youngest daughter, my grandson, he was in the second grade now. Mm-hmm. So he said, oh, Daddy, can you help me with stuff that he needs for school? I said, sure. Daddy already bought him a bag. I said, sure. You know, a couple of pencils, things like that. All right. We went over in the store and $74 later, he didn't need one pencil, two pencils, three pencils. He needed three packs of 20 pencils. He also needed 12 glue sticks. He also needed 4 ring leaf book, the folders.
Right.
He also needed 4 spiral notebooks.
And you know the
he also needed 4 packs of Kleenex, the large. He also needed, let's see, what was the other thing? Oh, he needed 12 erasers. The 12 erasers, now they only come for 4 in a pack, and but he needed 12 of the cap erasers that you put on top of pencil. He also needed a package the heavy paper. What do you call the heavy paper? They come to me. But he needed the paper for the printer paper. He needed 2 packs of that. He needed 1 pack of that and 1 pack of color printing paper. Then he needed the 3x5 index cards, 2 packs of that. He needed 2 packs of 4x7 index cards. Then he needed, I'm still trying to think of this.
You're talking about just.
This is second grade. Now, wait a minute.
They need, but listen, on top of that, if you look at your school, they have an entire wish list to the side.
Right.
Because they've so cut money.
This is the wish list.
That all the teachers.
This has got
to
be it.
But every year, that you have to bring in supplies all the time, from hand sanitizers to paper.
I forgot the hand sanitizers.
Because
we forgot that. I got to get that.
All of that burden.
Is now on the
they don't do any of it.
It's now on the parents.
Because all of that burden has been shifted to the teachers fully.
Right.
The schools don't pay for anything anymore. So now the teachers can't afford it, and they're just asking
for
the help. Because guess what? A lot of it is mandated that they have.
Right.
And if it's not mandated, they just need things like, you know, paper.
Well, this is mandated. And here's the problem.
This is all now on them, and they have to make parents pay for it.
Right.
Education.
I don't care about that. But if I wanted my grandson or my daughter wanted my grandson to go to a private school where you have to do that.
That's one thing.
That's one thing. This is public school. This is not
the
private school.
Defunding education.
Now, the thing is that my other grandson goes to private Catholic school, and they have a list that comes out your eyeballs.
Yes.
But, you know, hey, I remember that because I went to Catholic school my whole life. I remember we had to bring in and fund all this, but it was for us. We kept it in our cubby.
Yes.
Now, so the thing is now, I don't care about sharing it. I don't care about any of that. But don't do this under guise that this is a public school. This is because they want to get rid of public school.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They have. They've so gutted.
It's disgraceful.
You can't think, also, wait till your kids get a little bit older. They don't have textbooks. They can't even take them home.
Oh, right. Absolutely.
It's pathetic. It's across the board.
That's the idea. I had to bring in a writing paper.
They don't have help. They don't have librarians
anymore.
Yeah,
they have no more assistants. No more assistants. No more assistants.
None of it. Yeah. And that's why they're going to have more and more people now fleeing the public school system to go to private schools because they don't offer anything because they've chopped it down to a skeleton.
Absolutely. Because, hey, they'll
say, see, the system's failing. We need to get rid of it.
I just, let's see, my daughter, I think it's costing the Catholic school, I think it's costing about, you know.
But here's the thing.
I don't know what it costs now. But
I want to just.
Okay, see, I know it's $125 to register, and then you have to pay.
But here's
like $600-$700 a month.
It divides your country because, you know,
$800
each, right? One of the schools I taught for was a very wealthy private school.
Right.
I'm not going to name it here, but the disparity, the difference was unfreaking real.
In what?
My kids are in public school.
Right.
They go in there. They don't have anything. My one son, he was out in the trailers they had out back of the school for a year or two. Well, in a consolidation move, because they were trying to do something, you know, at the school, I have no idea what. But they took them all out, moved them all, like, into the cafeteria, and he got into a class. His classroom size was almost 60. Okay? And that was just half of it, because what they did was they had the entire room full of all the kids, and what they did was teach on either end. And he faces this one way for one teacher and the other way for the other teacher. And you're supposed to hear this, you know, rabble of 200 students all in there at once being taught on opposite sides. Okay? That was the class, right? Now, contrast that with, I was teaching at a school. Now, it's a private school.
Right.
So they have very expensive tuition. You know, they have very expensive parents that go there. So
right.
they get top dollar.
Right.
Okay, that's understood. But it's so disconcerting. I go there to teach. They've got the smallest class sizes I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
Anything from, you know, 10 students up to 12 or 15 or something like that.
And they got an assistant.
They have assistant. No, not only did they have assistants, they had.
An assistant for the assistant.
They had $10,000 smart boards on the walls. These things do everything. I can sit there and run the internet. I can run programs. I can run, you know, movies simultaneously with everything. You know, anything I wanted is right there. It's online. I have live connections to everything. Every student had laptops, you know, and iPads and everything else all across the whole thing. It was the easiest teaching environment I've ever had. I could instantly go, we're going to talk about ancient Rome today. Everybody go to Rome. They can just go to websites, run 3D models of the Colosseum, you know, do anything else. It was dreamland. And then I go back to, you know, my child in a gymnasium full of people screaming and crying, trying to talk over each other, and we have teachers on opposite ends of the building trying to shout a lesson.
Right.
You know, are you kidding me? But that's what they're doing to public education.
Well,
that's pathetic.
That is pathetic. That is pathetic. It's just so unbelievable. It is just so unbelievable how pathetic. I know when I was setting up a charter school here in Charlotte, That first year was a complete disaster. The school that we had picked, that was chosen for us, was a former, I think it was electronic school. It was electronic. It was a school plus it was a factory. This is not a factory building, but they produced components. And it wasn't finished on time for the school for it to be renovated to house high school. This is high school now. So the first, I think it was the first 3 months, we taught at the local Y that was near it. And we had the same problem. What they did was they brought in petitions, the petition off the gymnasium and petitions. Yeah, that's what it was. I mean, they had like, 35 petitions. So the thing was that I'm trying to teach my class. There is no way you hear, there's no way you hear what the, what's going on. You just can't hear what's going on. Everybody is teaching something, and then you expect to grade these kids. And I'm teaching media literacy. That means critical listening, critical viewing, and critical thinking. There is no way you could teach that. I mean, I'm teaching how to listen, and they're listening to the math teacher and the English teacher and the history teacher at the same time. So it's completely bogus. It's completely bogus. what they want. Now, let's see. We have, I don't know, we have someone else here that might want to come on. Let's see here. Hello there. Who's this? Lee.
Yes,
Lee. How are you? Hello. Lee. Yes, are you just going to listen?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you fine. Hello? Lee? Okay, I guess you're having a problem hearing me. Well, I'll keep you on hold.
Can you hear me now?
I hear you fine.
Okay. How are you this afternoon?
Huh?
How's everything going this afternoon?
I'm doing fine. You have a question or something you want to say?
Well, I had to call in because I heard you play How Lucky You Are. And that brought back pleasant memories from last week, so playing with the Load Up School of the Art.
That's right. Well, we're lucky that we're here, and we're here in a state that has Art Polk running it and Mini-Me second in command. Mini-Me McCrory.
Yeah, well.
So are you going to be up at the SEC meeting tomorrow?
Yeah, we plan on coming tomorrow just to, you know, see how things are going to go and see what, and to support Gwen. Welcome
yes.
To the
Seat Light Chair. Okay. Did you have anything to say? You probably didn't get a chance to hear Grace. Did you have a chance to hear Grace?
Yes, I did get a chance to hear Grace. I heard some of it, and what she said is exactly right. I mean, with regard to health care, I mean, you have these idiots in Raleigh who turn. In the efforts to overturn Obamacare, have turned down $15 billion worth of money that could be helping individuals in the state. It should be illegal to do that.
Well, hey, they make the laws, so it's legal when they say it is, because they make the laws. Now, of course, they can break the laws, but you can't break the laws.
Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs in the. And unfortunately,
yeah.
You know, there are many Democrats that are just as, you know, they're just as responsible as them because they didn't come out and vote in 2010 and allow these maniacs to take over the government.
Well,
now they. Pardon?
That is definitely true.
And so a lot of us, I won't say me, because I vote in every election, big or small, presidential or midterm. And, you know, what I hope this teaches the electorate out here, people in general, is that elections have consequences. And we're suffering.
You know that if the when it comes to the election, they're not just hurting Democrats. They're hurting their own people. Now, the question is, are their own people going to be hurt to the point where they won't scream, where they'll scream uncle and then go back to voting Democrats like they always did? Or are those people just going to just keep getting hurt and say, well, I'm suffering, but those people are suffering too? Well, you know, it's just like being in a lifeboat. You're out in the middle of the ocean. Everybody's suffering. Okay, but one says, you know, I'm a little sick. So you put him on the side of the boat. You don't want him to affect anybody else. So who's suffering more? Well, they think right now it's the person that's on the other side of the boat. But when that other side of the boat is the one who has the combination to the food locker that's on that boat, you got a major problem if that person dies. So,
yeah.
it's, you know, Are you, you know, it's just like the other old saying, you know, everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. Well,
you're exactly right. I mean, you know, you asked the question: Are they gonna continue to hurt with us? Because I mean, the policies that they're implementing certainly, I mean, anybody who's not already, you know, wealthy or a corporation, they're gonna hurt because of these policies.
So absolutely,
it's just a matter of. I think it's a matter of time because most people, most working people, vote their pocketbook, and these people are certainly affecting our pocketbooks and our lives in so many different ways. It's, you know, it's ridiculous. So, you know, you ask the question: are these people going to continue to suffer with us, or are they going to vote the right way? And I'm going to be optimistic here and say that I believe that they're going to vote, come back to the democratic values that we espouse, and vote for a stronger government in North Carolina as opposed to deregulation, and you know deregulation and privatization of everything. So I think they're going to come back. I certainly hope so.
There was another song in Susan Good Musical that said, "It's possible."
Yes.
And let's play a little bit of that.
This might be a pool like our brother's foot, connected to one of those underground rivers. An underground river that's such a grand flow, right under the bathtub, and then who knows? Right under the water.
and what I wanted to say from that is that anything's possible. The problem is that when these, and I read those figures before, that there was a white voters in North Carolina with voter ID are 46%. But white voters with no ID are 54%. So the 54% is going to be hurt. So all this time and work that they stole this state by redistricting may not help them if those people vote them out of office. So, you know, they keep saying, oh, it's going to be 7 years because we don't get another vote. No, if enough people are hurt in those redistricted areas, they can vote to get those people out, and these laws can change.
In their quest to hurt minorities and poor people, what happens invariably is they wind up hurting themselves. They hurt their own people, their own constituents, and that's what's going to happen here. So it's going to take people, they're going to have to feel the pain, and unfortunately some people are going to have to die, and people are going to have to be really hurt for all of these people to get over their prejudices and understand that, you know, government works for us all, not just a particular group and not just a particular corporation.
Well, I want to thank you, Lee, and you can continue to listen. We got some other things to get to, but I want you to, while you're still here, let me ask you this question. I'm going to play a little piece, and I want you to tell me what you think about it. Well, you really couldn't hear that well. That, I don't think you could, but that was the piece that was played at the Rodeo Clown Show in Missouri. We had a clown dressed up like Obama, and he was in the middle of the rodeo with the bulls chasing him, and they were yelling, "Look out, Obama, the bull's coming for you, he's coming for you." Now, I mean, these people. Now, this is money for this show to was paid for by the federal government. The state government of Missouri, which is a Democratic governor. And they immediately said, that ain't happening no more. If you do, we're pulling the money. You will never have that state fair again. Everybody apologized. That rodeo clown has been banned. Okay? But now a Texas representative, and at this point I can't think of his name, has invited that clown to wear his mask and costume at one of the state fairs they're having in Texas. What does that tell you about the state of the Regressive Party?
Well, it's what the obvious is, that they're profoundly racist and bigoted and hateful. And it is what it is. It's exactly that. They're just hateful, bitter, racist people who don't even care about America. Because how can you care about America, the country as a whole, and not care about a particular group? So it just shows how patriotic and how profoundly racist they are. And it lets me know that if we allow them to run the country, what it's going to be, it's going to be like the 1800s. You know, you have people. They want to take us back into slavery and indentured servitude. That's what they want. Free labor.
And they aren't trying to hide that they want free labor. They're not trying to hide that. What they're trying to hide is saying that they're not racist. But they are. I mean, I believe it was that clown Rush Limbaugh, who says that, you're overreacting. You're overreacting. I mean, can you believe that? And if I could find it on here, I will tell you. You can hear exactly what he said because let me just play a little bit. It is a quick clip from Rush. Okay.
This guy, Barack Obama, he can't laugh at himself, and he doesn't want anybody else. That isn't going to happen. He's above it all, folks. You don't dare. I think we're dealing with somebody literally spoiled rotten from the early days of their lives.
This is the President of the United States that has been spoiled rotten from the day... Oh, but he's supposed to be in tenure, so he's spoiled rotten in tenure? I mean, I don't understand this. This man, Barack Obama, who they commonly refer to as being half white, which he is, was spoiled rotten, and Mitt Romney or George Bush, who were born with silver spoons in their mouth, weren't spoiled rotten.
I mean, this is how he is.
Oh, yes. But the main thing is, they were playing with this clown's lips in the middle of the radio screen. Now, what were they trying to indicate with that? It's just a joke? You can't take a joke? I mean, they can't take a joke? I mean, it's just completely racist. But they know that the people who are listening to them are just like them. So it's not going to be a mix with them. It's not going to be a
They're not going to be any. The problem is that there are not any repercussions and consequences for them doing all this foolishness. And that's because we're allowing them to do that. And there was a time when you grew up in New York, so you knew, and you spoke out of your mouth inappropriately in the wrong situation, you paid for it in one way or another. Is that correct?
That's right.
Well, that's what's happening now. That's why these people are allowed to get away, because there are no repercussions. There are no repercussions for what they do. And as long as they can do and say anything they want to, no matter how insulting, and there are no repercussions behind them saying that, they're going to do it. No matter what we say, no matter who it offends. And so what we have to do is we have to find a way to make them pay for what they say and what they do.
Well, here's now this is, I believe, the day or the week after the president won re-election. This is what Rush said.
The Republicans keep throwing away aspects of their core beliefs under this silly belief that that's how we'll get things done. We'll finally get to what matters. We'll get this tax business off the table, and now we can focus on spending. We're running out of core beliefs to throw away, folks. Obama's victory here has been massive, profound, sweeping, unbelievably large.
Now, this is what he was saying back then. You would never notice that by what he says now at all. And I'd like to ask this. We have another gentleman on the phone right now who is the chairman of the Democratic Party in North Carolina, Mr. Randy Bolla. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Hi, Randy.
How are you doing?
That's Lee Little on the other phone.
Hey, Lee.
Hi, Chairman Bolla. I hope everything is going well for you.
I still have my head on my shoulders, and I'm walking on 2 feet, and things are going better for me than Governor McCrory.
That's a fact.
Exactly. So what do you think about that, Mr. Chairman? Here we have Republican Party that has nothing to say but people up in clown costumes like the president and say that he's not racist. I mean, how is that even remotely possible that people could believe something like that?
People evaluate situations through the filters and lenses they choose to use. And part of gaining understanding is to actually change the internal records that we play to ourselves. So you have to learn to walk in someone else's shoes sometimes, and that's a difficult task.
Well, we have Mr. Art Pope that passed. I'm sorry, Governor McCrory, who just passed this and signed this voter ID bill. Well, it is. It's Art Pope's ID bill. It's not McCrory. McCrory's a puppet. As we said, he's tattoo. He's a tattoo to Art Pope. And this voter ID bill says requires North Carolinians to have a voter ID. Now, the population of North Carolina, non-whites, which I was just talking about, Lee with, is 30. With non-whites, are 30%. Early voter turnout of non-whites was 33%. White voters with ID are 46%, and white voters with no ID is 54%. Don't these guys ever look at numbers? I mean, how could they pass a law like this that's killing their own vote?
Well, part of it, Michael, is that when you let ideology trump your evaluation of the facts, it becomes increasingly difficult to govern. I mean, I talked with a citizen that had visited a number of Republican legislators, older white gentleman who was an aeronautical engineer,
right.
And he is talking to them about hydraulic fracturing, and it turned out that he discovered that most of them who were going to be voting on it really didn't understand the ins and outs of fracking. They had been listening to the talking points. It just created jobs. They didn't really know all the environmental impacts. And after spending time with them, they said, you know, you need to tell more Republicans this. And this, you know, obviously we can all become guilty of letting our ideology drive a particular point of view, but I think they're guilty of this because they've come to believe that voter ID, because of Rush Radio and others, that this is somehow this mass epidemic. They've come to believe it, even though it's been proven to not be true. I think what we're going to have to do, Dr. Ben Chavis said it in a speech last night in New Bern, we just need to flood the polls. We just need to show them that this stuff doesn't work and that people want to vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. So how is it that we can get this across to a populace that is now inundated with every single thing you can imagine against voting, even?
I think what we're going to have to do is recognize that there's a certain percentage of the population that is, you know, working in an echo chamber, and they're increasingly resistant to fact-based arguments, much like pests become increasingly resistant when you come and treat a house and have to ignore them and go to the group of people, the 70% that are going to be reasonable to deal with and understand that these are important issues. I mean, I know that in the Republican Party there's frustration about the rejection of science. That, you know, we all have friends that are Republicans or Republican-leaning unaffiliates, and they find this rejection of science, this rejection of fact-based arguments to be at best problematic and at worst undermining their entire movement and their entire message. I mean, how can you ignore the evidence of climate change?
Right.
It's a significant long-term problem that's going to affect our coastal cities and our way of life. And to deny it and to refuse to work on it is to essentially work on short-term profits and short-term gains at the expense of future. And that's what I see happening here. They're trying to preserve power. They recognize a changing demography, and they figure, well, the way we'll preserve power is we'll make it more difficult to vote, and we'll ensure that only the people that we know to vote are going to vote. And they're ignoring the fact that in the older white population, a lot of people don't have some of this information they're going to need to get IDs. On top of which, recent information shows that their policies are starting to aggravate seniors, and that's going to show up at the polls too.
Well, the thing is that have they closed down DMVs in the city? Around the state, have they closed off DMVs around the state that makes it harder for people to get a government ID?
I don't know. I don't think they have. I'm sure that they're gonna try to think through this problem and how it'll most benefit them.
Because every other state that has approved these sort of draconian laws has done just that. In Texas, they've closed up, I think, 70% of the motor vehicle stations or places, or curved the time that they're open.
That's probably going to be in the offing, I imagine.
Well, I mean, because there's no way. But, you know, and as I was telling people before, that there is no way for someone to sit there and think that you can hurt my neighbor and I won't be next on the hit parade.
Right.
I mean, that doesn't make it. And if that's what you think, then, yeah, you know, you deserve everything you get. Because people, this is a village. This is not I know they don't like me saying this because it's a village. It takes a village. It takes a village for us to all live on this planet. And as a matter of fact, tonight at 8 o'clock on MSNBC, if I can give them a plug, they're having an hour show, or maybe more, on the climate change hosted by Chris Hayes. Well, they go
That's right.
Depth in this particular topic. And one of the contrasts that they use is what the oil companies, the big oil companies, the big cigarette companies said, oh, there's nothing wrong with tobacco. We have found no problem when we have done testing. Well, the daggone oil companies have said the same thing. The problem is that you can't police yourself. And we were talking about
earlier
with Matt Newton here, who's a lawyer here in Charlotte, and a young lawyer, and he's very much involved in the citizen review process, which seems to have which is absolutely worthless. I mean, they've estimated some 1,500 cases over the last 5 or 10 years, and only 3 have gone to the citizen review, and has gone to the citizen in the final analysis. Now, we know everything is not 100%, but you can't get closer than that. 1,500 and only 3 against the police department. I mean, that's just completely impossible. So everything is the propaganda that is spread is completely done just like it did in the old Nazi era with the propaganda of, you know, we tell a lie, tell it long enough, tell it hard enough, and we'll add in a little bit of common sense to catch your eye.
That's true. And, you know, and Michael, I will see you tomorrow. I've got to go.
All right.
I'm running up in Durham tonight, and I'll be in Greensboro later tonight, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay, very good. I spoke to Grace. She's already up there in and Greensboro, and I will see everybody up there tomorrow. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Bye. And that's the chairman of our party, Democratic Party. And I say our party because he's my party also. And he's up there. His owner's going to be up there tomorrow. He's going to be talking. And Grace said that great Senator, Senator Kay Hagan, might also be there, and that will be great. Maybe I can get a chance to interview her while we're up here. And my grandson is coming here trying to be, because Thomas had to leave. He had to go to a funeral this afternoon. Oh, Wake, either one. I think it was Wake. And so I'm running the show one hand with, as Rush says, with half my brain tied behind my back. Oh, is it my half my arm or one of my arms tied behind my back? And whatever it is. I mean, I'm just like Rush. I can do the same thing. But my grandson says he insists upon helping me here. This is the little one who says he knows more than me, but, you know, probably does. But as we were saying before, as I was saying before, there is so much ignorance out here, and it keeps getting worse. I mean, the ignorance, first of all, Lee, tell us something about what the heck is going on in Union County.
Well, in Union County, you have the same thing.
By listening, Union County, North Carolina. Go ahead.
Union County is engulfed in turmoil right now regarding the way that they did their convention. And pretty much that there's a count, there are two councils reviewing cases that are pending, so I can't really say a lot about it. But it speaks to what we've been talking about with regard to race. I wrote an article, I haven't submitted it, but it's entitled Two Parties in One Month. And basically what you have is
I'm having a hard time hearing Lee.
I said, basically what you have here is Dixocrats, people who don't support progressive ideas, who are trying to take over the party in this county, and they refuse to follow the plan of organization or any of the rules, and as a result of that, they have two cases pending because of the way that they held their convention or attempted to hold their convention. So you have people that are claiming to be chairs and officers of the Democratic Party here, and those claims are invalid because they're not doing the right thing. What they want to do are those people is to disenfranchise people of color and people who aren't as wealthy as others. A closed party. That's the way I see it. And so we're fighting to prevent that. But we're not fighting to necessarily be the leaders of the party, but we're fighting to ensure that the right thing is done and that everybody who might have an aspiration to be an officer in the party can get a fair shake and be elected or not elected based on their merit. And so that's all we're asking is fairness. And I believe that the rules are on our side and that we'll prevail.
What's the ratio between the Progressive Party and the Democratic Party in Union County?
What is the relationship?
Ratio between the Progressive Party and how many Democratic parties there are, Democratic voters there are.
Well, pretty much 40 split. It may be less. It may be a little closer than that
40. I'm having a hard time hearing you. I don't know if you're using or a speaker or you're moving around, but you seem to break up every other word.
Can you hear me better now?
Yes, I hear better now.
I think the split is the Republicans are certainly in the majority, and it's around 60-40. I could be wrong, but it may be the difference in population may be a little bit less than 60-40, but you know, it could be 45-55, but still they're in the majority as far as population. There are no county commissioners that are.
I don't mean population, Lee. I mean, how many are registered and voting Republicans versus registered and voting Democrats?
That's information that I'd have to look up. I don't recall it right now. I used to, in the middle of the elections, I have those types of statistics, but I don't recall. That I don't recall right now. I know they're in the majority by about 10,000 votes, though.
Oh, well, 10,000 votes is nothing. I mean, 10,000 votes is nothing. If you're saying that the Regressive Party controls Union County by 10,000 votes, that is nothing. That's not even a congressional district.
No, it's not.
I mean,
and what you have here in Union County is you have of independent voters also.
Yeah, what? I didn't hear you. You broke up.
I said,
how many
contingent? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, how many independent voters?
I think it's 16%.
18%?
About 16%. I believe are independent voters. Did you hear me?
Yeah, I heard you. Well, it's a red state.
It's a red area.
Red county, but 10,000 votes is not enough to say, oh, forget about it. I mean, that's something that could be won.
Absolutely. If we could get Democrats got independent voters to vote them, then we could win.
Okay, very good. Well, I'm going to see you up there tomorrow, and I'm hoping, as our 8th district chair said, Dr. Grace Galloway, that it's a possibility that Senator Kay Hagan will be there. That would be a fabulous idea if I get married, get her to record, sit down and record something. If not, we have a call in, but. This will be a great time that we can, if we can get Gwen elected as the first vice chair, and this might help get us rolling because, as I was saying to the chairman just a while ago, Deputy, just because we don't control the state anymore, just because of redistricting, the people who were redistricted who think they now have it made are in for a view, now can start to see the rude awakening because this is hurting them also.
Let me say one more thing, Michael, before I go. I've got to go, but I'd like to say one more thing. The strategy, this is what I'm hearing, is the strategy is that they're going to try to do a vote of no confidence for Chairman Vollmer. And I don't think that's going to work. But their strategy is to try to get him out and to try to get June Mabry in as the first chair. And the former congressman, I think I've heard a lot.
Is June Mabry running for first vice chair?
She's not. But if Union County is seated, they're going to nominate her from the floor. That's what I've heard. Just this afternoon.
Well, that ain't going to happen. Union County don't have enough votes for her to win. But she won't get any in Mecklenburg, and we're larger. We can put Union County in our pocket. So forget that.
Well, based on what's going on in the Council of Review complaints, Union County shouldn't even be seated. They shouldn't even be able to vote. But that's... You know, I'm not in control of that, but I just hope that the powers that be do the right thing when it comes to Union County and the first vice chair, Diane Lubin.
Well, the that would take the council of review. Their meeting isn't even to the 16th.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm just...
Of September. So whatever, even if they decide to seat Union County, and if things go backwards for them September 16th, that will be all voided.
Yeah, but the damage,
If it's all voided, everything will be rescinded that was done.
Okay.
So,
it seems like they would go ahead and hear that before all of this happened so they wouldn't have to backtrack.
Yeah. The Council of Review is an independent body. They are not, they don't have to go along with what's going on in the party. They're independent.
Anyway, I just wanted to put that out there. I've got to run as well.
Yeah, I'm glad you did.
But it's always a pleasure, and you took me back with those songs from physical to musical, and I just hope that we can, get these kids funded so that they can do even more great things on the stage. I'll end with that.
We have another caller. Hello, Paula. Who's this?
Yes, this is Dr. Benjamin Chavis, Jr.
How are you, Dr. Chavis? How's everything?
I'm doing fine. I'm always glad to be able to call in. I'm back in North Carolina, my home state, and I was with Brother Randy Vallow there earlier, and we're going to be together tonight at the Durham Committee on the Affairs of Black People, and then I'll be in Greensboro tomorrow.
That's wonderful.
Hi, Dr. Ben.
This is Lee Little from Union County speaking, Dr. Chavis.
All right, good. Union County. There's a lot going on in Union County.
No,
yeah. Are you going to come to the event after the SEC tomorrow?
I believe so. I'm going to spend the whole day in Greensboro tomorrow, so I'll be there for all the activities.
Good. That's very good. There's so many things I wanted to ask you, but I'd like to know what as you were about stopping the first in New York.
Okay, you're breaking up a little bit. I couldn't hear the question. Could you repeat the question for me?
Sure. What as the former chair of the NAACP, what is your position on the stop and frisk fiasco, as I called it, in New York City?
Well, I thought all the time that stop and frisk is unconstitutional. I'm glad that Attorney General Eric Holder is now calling it into question. I do believe that eventually stop and frisk, which is another form of racial profiling, will be found illegal and unconstitutional, not only in New York City, but across the United States.
Well, it was found illegal by a federal judge in New York City. So now I understand the mayor has set forth a appeal decision. But it's illegal.
Right. Well, I think any form of racial profiling by the police or by any other agency of the government should not be permitted. It's a violation of fundamental human rights, and when it's racial profile, obviously it's a violation of civil rights.
Absolutely. Well, some other things quickly I wanted to ask you before we run out another 8 minutes or so here. The North Carolina voting ID bill that was passed by Art Pope here in North Carolina. I said Art Pope because Art Pope is actually running the state. McCrory is tattooed to Art Pope. The vote ID.
I think that we need to fight that in court. It needs to be overturned. What the legislature did was again unconstitutional, and I'm sure that eventually we'll prevail in court. But in the meantime, I think this is a rallying call not only for African Americans, but for all progressives. We need to overwhelm the Republicans with votes. We need to vote them out of office. The only thing that they understand is what happens at the polls. That's why they're trying to suppress the vote. But we cannot allow our vote to be suppressed. This is a rallying call. We have to, the next time we should get an option to go to the polls, we need to flood the polls. I don't care if we have to stand an hour, 12 hours, like I had to do in Florida last year. I didn't care how long I was going to cast my vote. I was not going to allow these Republicans to keep us from voting. We need to have that attitude here in North Carolina. No matter what they do, we're not going to allow them to prevent us from getting to the polls.
Well, what the thing that they wanted to do was, no matter who's online, they were going to close the polls. They want to close the polls at a certain time, regardless.
Well, again, if people flood the polls, we won't allow them to close the polls. And keep in mind that people open the doors to the polls, not the officials. And we're not going to allow them to close the doors. People died to get the right to vote. And we're not going to allow some backwardness in the state legislature to take away our God-given right to have a right to vote.
Well, you know, here in North Carolina, 30% of the people of the voting populace are non-white. 33% vote early who are non-white. But the white voter will have to see of 46%. The white voters that you have ID are 44%.
Exactly, but again, what we have to do, there has to be a response. And the response is not only in the courts, but there has to be a response at the voting booth. You see, sometimes, I don't want this to become a self-fulfilling prophecy. If we predict a lower voter turnout, that's exactly what will happen. What we have to predict, what we have to organize, what we have to mobilize is an overwhelming refutation of what the legislature did. And the only way you can refute them is to vote them out of office. And the only way you're going to be able to vote them out of office, we're going to have to turn out to the polls a record number. No matter what obstacles they put in our path, we have to turn the stumbling stones into stepping stones.
Well, you know, it just seems that everything that you did and everything that Dr. King did and all the other freedom riders, they want to turn back like it never happened.
Absolutely. I spoke in New Bern last night. I think that Governor McCrory and the Republicans are moonwalking. They're appearing to go far, but actually they're walking backwards. They're taking the state back into the Confederacy. And those of us that love freedom, justice, and equality, we got to fight them. And we can't give an inch to them. We can't give up anything to them. We're not going to lose one voter over their shenanigans. It needs to be fought. But I just want to say our attitude about it has to be in a posture that we're going to respond in a way that teaches them a lesson. See, you can't let people put a rope around your neck and then apologize for hanging you. We have to take the rope off, and I'm for taking the rope off and whooping some of these Republicans for what they're doing.
Right. Well,
I'm running out of time. I got to go. I just want to call in and give you all the best and thank you for all the good work you continue to do.
And I will see you tomorrow up at the SEC meeting.
Absolutely. God bless and take care.
God bless you too. Thank you. That was Dr. Ben Chavis, who we will see at the meeting tomorrow at the SEC meeting in Greensboro. And he's moving back to he's moving back to North Carolina, and he's in about 6 months, so that puts us a couple more months. I think he said he'd be back before Christmas or by Christmas. So this has been a good show today, and we now found out who Tattoo is, and that is Pat McCrory. And who's the what's his name? The Tattoo's the boss at the Fantasy Island, Mr. something or other. What is his name? I can't remember his name. But anyway, he is Tattoo at to Art Pope, and we will see how Tattoo can yell the plane. Well, he's yelling right now. The vote, the ID. So we'll see. We'll see how this goes. But I want to thank everybody for this today's show. And I just want everybody to remember how lucky you are. Because, hey, who could ask for anything more being in a state where it's run by Art Pope and Tattoo? Okay, everybody. I am going to get out of here, and let's see. We got my Dodgers. Oh, before I leave, I could talk about my Dodgers. My Dodgers have won 8 in a row after winning 15 in a row. They start a new, I think it's with the Phillies tonight. So wish them luck. They need to take that Western Division and then take the pennant. I would have loved to have seen them in the World Series with the Yankees, but that ain't going to happen because the Yankees ain't getting to the World Series after A-Rod is being after his last game that he plays this year, which will be his last game. That's why he wanted to fight this so he could stay in the next, well, at that time it was 50 games to the end of the season, because this will be his last season. Because when he's banned all of 2014, he will not come back. It's the end of the story. No baseball player is at 39. He'll be 40-something, 41 when he comes back, or 40. You're not coming back at 40 and playing Major League Baseball. You might be able to come back in football. You might be able to come back in basketball. But you ain't coming back in baseball. Well, I don't think you can come back in football either at 40, but unless you're a quarterback or a kicker. But there ain't no room for you unless you're a pitcher. In baseball, not as a regular player. Wait a minute. I think Minnie Minoso played until he was like 45, and he was hitting. But he played first base, so he didn't have to do much running. But he's not A-Rod. So, ladies and gentlemen, just remember one thing. You're living in the greatest country in the world, and you're living in a state that has Tattoo as the governor. How lucky can you get? You can't get much luckier than that. All right, everybody. This is Friday, the last word, August 16th. And, yes, my grandson is saying goodbye. Say goodbye. He said goodbye. All right. He said hallelujah, and we're getting off here right now because I'm hungry. All right. Bye-bye.
When the news is all bad, when you're sour and blue, when you start to get mad, you should do what I do. Tell yourself how lucky you are. When the fates are unkind, when your life's going wrong, when you're limping along and get kicked from behind, tell yourself how lucky you are. Why decry a cloudy sky, an empty purse, a crazy universe? My philosophy is simply things could be worse. So be happy you're here. Think of life as a thrill. And if worse comes to worse, as we all know it will, thank your lucky star, you've gotten this far. And tell yourself how lucky you are. How lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky you are.